You only hear volume in one side.
Okay.
10 junk miles.
We're live now. We're recording.
This is it. Yeah, this is how it works.
And Tony's on? 10 junk miles.
And Tony's on?
Tony, no. I just tell him that. 10 junk miles. Then I put the file up in the Dropbox. And then he brings it down.
10 junk miles.
It's a whole production.
10 junk miles.
So, he'll be here for Thursday for the show.
Okay, cool.
It seems like it's kind of loud. Hey, everybody. Welcome to 10 Junk Miles. I'm Scott Coomer, and this is going to be a long-run interview with Stephen Tursey, whom I've kind of known on the internet over the years and gotten to know pretty well. And he's a fan of the show. He's a listener. And he just happens to be on an epic road trip passing through. And boom, he's actually live on the couch having this discussion with me. Welcome, Steve.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Yeah. So we were just talking about how later on this week I'm going to interview the marathon investigation guy. And the only rule you got to do is you got to eat the mic when you talk. You got to try and be in it. You can't be too close to it. Don't lick it, but you know, get close.
Yeah.
And that this later this week I'm going to interview that guy, and then hopefully I've talked to this woman a couple times on the internet who she's like a personal trainer, and she. Maybe she used someone else's bib to run Boston, even though she's fast enough to have done it on her own. And then when the bombing went off, she said she was close to the bombing, but evidently she wasn't as close to the bombing as she said he was. So this guy did this whole thing about her, and just like, I mean, the part that I want her on for is the wrecking of the life part, you know? Mm. And like, we've had a discussion on the Facebook page about this guy and this phenomenon, and I've made it very clear. I'm not pro-cheating. I don't want people to cheat. I don't want people to get away with cheating. I don't want people to steal. But at the same time, like, if you and I could rid the world of one evil, and we had to choose between marathon cheating or public humiliation.
Yeah, seriously.
Which one would
you know, that's a really good point. And you know, and it persists, too.
Yeah.
People will always know this for that person, for that humiliation. It's
hard to get out from under it.
I know, right?
Once the social media shaming happens, there's no turning back.
It's just like the Google. Every time you apply for a job, they're going to Google you. You know, there's companies that make money off of, like, trying to erase that history or bury that history so that people don't find it. And that exists because there's other people who are out there just trying to humiliate you.
Yeah.
You know, or they're out there to punish you. They feel they actually don't have bad intentions. But it seems like, I don't know, it seems like a little bit of a myopic view of the world. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Well, there's an ick factor. And then I don't think, like, the people that are, like, everyone shares it, like, in that Trail and Ultra group and in the Marathon Maniac group. And then this guy shares it and that guy shares it. And then I don't think they're thinking, I want to ruin this girl's life. But that's what happens, is then eventually it's been shared, you know, 987 times, and then your neighbor sees it, and your boss sees it, and you're, you know. And I read a book by this John Ronson. It's called So You've Been Publicly Shamed.
I read that, too.
Yeah, those, and, like, that thing with the two guys at the video, or at the gamer, or the programmer convention and all that.
Yeah.
They weren't trying to be dicks, but, you know.
But they, if I recall, they got fired from their job for that.
Yep.
I know. It's crazy the way they... what that happens there, but man.
So I'm doing that show, and then I'm doing another gang show without Rachel, but with Tony, and so that'll be really fun. And
cool.
We're talking about Tony, so.
Yeah.
he'll be excited to be part of the show that day, and we've been working hard on the race app thing.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah. Hopefully that thing takes off, because like my dream, you know, we had talked about the fact that there's, you know, like when you want to, let's say I want to do Umstead. I'm like, oh, well, you know, I could talk to you. I could talk to Julie. And then I get on Google and I Google Umstead race reports and I read the first two or three that pop up. But there's no like central place for these, and there's no way of knowing the good ones from the bad ones.
Yep.
So my hope is that someday, kind of like Strava, it'll just take over all the race reports,
mm-hmm.
and they'll all be in one place, and then everyone's going to like rank them, kind of like Reddit, you know, like the
you upvote or downvote,
exactly.
and the good ones hopefully rise to the top. It's a great idea,
and you can comment on them, and then maybe we're going to like keep the, we're still develop. I mean, it's a project that never ends,
mm-hmm.
and
it's as these things do.
Yeah,
and then because sooner or later someone's going to say, "Why are you only doing ultras? Let's do marathons too."
Well, no, marathons are in there too.
Why not you do 5Ks too? Why don't you do triathlons
all
too?
Of them.
Like, all that stuff,
everything.
But all that's expanding and all. Yeah.
And more countries, and you know, and then I'll be like, "Well, Tony, why can't we add this feature or that feature?" You know, and it just grows.
I want to search races. Yeah. I want to search by distance. I want to search by.
You can already do that.
Oh, wow. There you go.
By location, by distance, by like timed events, by state, yeah, by, yeah, you know, a city. So you just type in, you know, like if you put in like Hennepin Hunter, you put H-E-N-N, and as you're doing that, it's narrowing.
Yep.
And then it'll be all the race reports pertaining to that race. So
nice, nice.
It's going to be cool. So, well, enough, awesome, enough about me, you know, let's talk about you.
Okay.
And I know that you do a lot of races. I know you, I know you as someone who does 100 milers, does that at the fair thing. Mm-hmm. You're an East Coast guy?
Yeah, New Jersey.
Born and raised in?
I was born in Flushing, New York. I went to high school actually in San Clemente, California. And then when I was 21, I met now my wife. And
who's sitting here with me.
Yep. She's joining me on this road trip. And we got married, and I've been living back in New York, New Jersey ever since. When we got married, when we first met, we were living in Long Island City, New York, which is in Queens. Then we moved to Suffern, New York, which is in Rockland County, you know, a little bit north of the city and west of the river. And then we made the big move 3 miles to Mahwah, New Jersey, just right across the border. So
now you're in New Jersey.
Yeah, now I'm in northern New Jersey, Bergen County. And yeah, it's kind of a cool place to live. It's, you know, commuter towns, basically. I work in New York City. And it's you know, Mahwah, New Jersey is surrounded by parks, plenty of trails to run, although I usually run roads, believe it or not. And just, you know, just because of the time or whatever, you know, it's just, you know, I like to, I like trails, I like roads, I like everything. And yeah, so.
So are you a Jets or a Giants?
Jets.
And then does that make you Mets?
Mets.
Jets and Mets.
Yes.
All right. Is that a big deal? Does that tell a lot about a person to you?
Jets and Giants, not so much. Mets and Yankees, you know, really no, but you'd like to act like it does, you know?
Yeah.
You know, you know, I'm a Mets fan, so obviously all Mets fans are good people and all Yankee fans are degenerate cretins or something like that. But you know, it's all in good fun.
So what took you to California?
My parents moved there. We moved to California when I was 10. So my father moved there, and that's where we just lived. We lived in Orange County. San Juan Capistrano, and I went to San Clemente High School, and I kind of always wanted to go back to New York. I had these, you know, going, you know, in my teens, I was like, I had these nostalgic childhood memories of living in New York, and California just seemed like, just didn't seem to fit, right? And I wanted to go back, and I'm going to go back, and I want to go back. And I told all my friends I'll go back, and I'm a Mets fan, and I want to, you know. And so the first opportunity I got, I was 21 years old, I believe, or 22. I moved back to New York. Yeah. So
were you a runner when you were a kid?
No, I did not start running really until, I guess, I was about 20 or 21 years old when I started running. I was a fat kid. I'm still a fat guy, but I was a much fatter kid. So at one point, I was about 400 pounds.
I think I saw that picture today.
Yeah.
Looking at pictures.
Oh, you were looking at, yeah. So at one point, like, you know, probably about 19 years old, you know, I gained a lot of weight. I was about 400 pounds. In high school, I mean, since I'm such a big guy, I played 1 year of football after the coaches finally wore me down. I was a wrestler my first couple of years in high school. That was fun, but I never, you know, I hated running. You know, it's like, oh, they're making me run again. You know, And I always did it, but, you know.
So you weren't an athlete and you weren't a runner?
Definitely not a runner. And it would be funny to call me an athlete at the time because I was just kind of like the fat guy that goes out for, you know, that does something. You know, I was involved in various things and, you know, I was in the choir. I was doing photography. I did all sorts of weird stuff like that in high school. Not weird stuff, but just a different, you know, I was involved in a lot of things and sports was one of them, but not running. You know,
how'd you get so fat?
It's a funny story. I overate anyway, but we got these jobs. Our friend of mine got a job at CompUSA, right? And we were, and all the group of guys from CompUSA, we used to go to this restaurant called Claim Jumper.
What year is this?
We're talking 1994, 1995.
Okay.
We used to go to this restaurant called Claim Jumper, which is known for enormous portions. And I feel like my identity is tied up in like going to extremes and going to excesses. And so I would love to go to this place and get to see the biggest thing they had and just like eat all it up. And we would do this 2-3 times a week because we were making, to me, which was decent money. I didn't have a mortgage. I was given a car by my parents. I only had to make insurance payments, you know, their old car. I really didn't have any responsibilities financially. And so we were able to eat out all the time at this restaurant, this like chain restaurant. It's like, you know, but with big portions. And so we became regulars at this place, eating there 3 times a week and eating. And before I knew it, I was 400 pounds.
So it was just the culture of working, not exercising, and then eating as much as you can.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much. Yeah.
How much did you weigh when she met you? Your wife, who I'm pointing at.
I was going to say.
Gag. It's a real good thing on the podcast. Her, over there.
That woman, right? I was about, I'm going to say about 330, 340. No, actually, when I first met you, I was probably I was lower than that. I was about 310, 320. But then I gained weight after the first couple of years. Yeah, we both did. Yeah, we ate out a lot. I did this, so. Yeah, I was, yeah, okay. Answering your question.
So California, you graduated from high school. Was that there that you were working at CompUSA?
Yes.
That, okay.
Yeah.
And then you moved back, and then at what point do you make the shift of, was there a line? Was there like a number in your head where you're like, if I go over X, it's done?
Or, no.
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 So when did you like take control of this or try?
I never consciously took control of the weight, but I knew that if I started running, I would lose weight. Mm-hmm. And I figured that was the best way to do it. And it was at the time because, basically what I did was I signed up for the LA Marathon in like 1997 or something like that.
Did you know anyone that ran?
No.
Okay.
No. I ran and, I didn't run it. I signed up for it and I started training. And I remember like, I'm like 21 years old or 22 years old, whatever it was. And I'm like, and I do this 1 mile, maybe mile and a half run out to this park and back, and I'm laying on my parents' living room floor just like exhausted for a half hour.
This is still San Juan.
This is still San Juan, yeah. And so so that was like my first run. I remember that. And then I just kind of like went out, and then like I got a friend to do a 5K with me, and you know, he's like, you know, and I ran every step of it. I remember I was so proud of that. And it was like 44 minutes, but I ran every step of it, you know. And I did another 5K, and then I stopped, you know. So that was that.
So you didn't, like, get in a training program. You didn't have a plan. You didn't know what the hell you were doing.
I might have looked up a training program on the internet, but I didn't stick with it very long. And I didn't run a marathon, you know. So, you know, that was that, as they say.
So what's next? When do you finally end up running? What was your first race? What was your first like half marathon?
Okay.
It in that training?
So it wasn't in that training. When I did move back to New York, I met her. The woman in the corner.
That lady.
Yeah. That.
It'll really irritate people after a while.
So I met my wife, who would become my wife. She was my girlfriend at the time. And somehow I convinced her to do a half marathon with me. And yeah, right.
She's groaning, by the way.
And I had some friends that you know, buddies of mine that were crashing on our floor, and we used to do this. We were in, this was in Long Island City, and there's this graveyard next to Long Island City underneath the Kosciuszko Bridge. You've seen pictures of this graveyard in like the Godfather movie. And it was like a mile and a half around, and we used to run around this graveyard, my friends and mine, you know, because I ran 5Ks. I wasn't.
In your mind, you had signed up for a marathon already. So
exactly.
You were a runner.
Yeah, exactly. And that wasn't the only marathon I signed up for and didn't run. I also signed up for the San Diego Marathon in like 98 and didn't run that. So, and I think I probably ran a couple more 5Ks in that time. I don't know, you know. So we would do this graveyard run a bunch of times, and then I finally said, I'm fine. You know, I'm going to go run a half marathon. So we did and ran the Brooklyn half marathon. And and she did it with me. And
did you run together the whole time?
Okay. No, I did about 3 hours. I remember I ran the first half nonstop and then pretty much walked the second half nonstop.
Were you moved to the sidewalk or were you still on the actual course?
By the time in the Brooklyn Half Marathon at the time, I only ran it once that 1 year. But at the time, it started at Coney Island and ran up to Prospect Park and then 2 loops around the park. And inside the park, you didn't have the road closure issues.
Okay.
She was DFL in that race. She came in about a mile.
In a half marathon?
Yeah.
That, I've never met anyone that's done that.
Yeah.
That's remarkable.
It was awesome.
I mean, that's everybody's fear, right?
Yeah.
When they do like their first marathon, half marathon, it's always like, I don't want to be last. And yeah, it's like, there's no way you're going to. Until now.
All the signs. Remember that I was crying to you?
Yeah. Yeah. So. Yeah, she was moved up to the side of Ocean Parkway. Ocean Parkway? Well, you know, whatever the road is that goes up to Prospect Park. And there was this guy. Remember Boombox? There was this guy who was in, like, orange leg warmers and, like just extravagant. And he ran with this boombox on his shoulder. And he's just grooving the whole
race.
This is 2000, I'm going to say either 2000 or 2001 okay. In March, in the spring. And yeah, Boombox was there in the back of the pack, and you were hanging out with him for a while, weren't you? That's the only reason they stayed. The volunteers, they're like, "Oh yeah, that's Boombox. He comes to every race," and it was so funny. I've never seen Boombox since, but it was this. It's a great story of like when my wife and I were just getting, you know, and we did sign together. I think that's the last race she ever did with me.
So my wife won half marathon.
Oh, there you go.
Her whole career.
There you go.
One and done. And she was moved to the sidewalk too.
Yeah.
But she wasn't DFL. She was, I mean, probably. Hey,
DFL.
Look it up, it's back close.
DFL to me is a sign of honor. I don't know, you know, maybe for, a, you know.
I ran with her too.
Like, oh, yeah.
I ran the whole, well, she took off.
But was it your first half marathon?
No.
Okay.
No. So I had a period of being a roadie and doing lots of marathons. Then I took time off when I met her and got married. Mm-hmm. And then this was like the, let's get back into shape. And then we were going to train and run a half marathon together. But I still had a lot more talent than she did, or, you know, as you would call it, I don't know. And, but I ran to her level that day.
Okay.
She took off. And so for someone that's never run a half marathon and isn't a very fast runner to be like that far ahead of me, I was like, I don't know what the hell she's doing. And then she like crashed like at the halfway point, and then it was just like suffer fest for the rest. But
and you hung out with her, huh?
Yeah,
awesome.
I stayed with her the whole time.
That's great. Yeah. That's good for you.
She got her one medal, and then she, I don't think she's run a foot ever since.
Nice.
That was the end. So after this half marathon, obviously your wife retires.
Yes.
What was the effect on you?
So I did like basically the same thing I had been doing previously. I would go through these periods where I'd try to run, and I'd run for a few weeks. Maybe I'd do a, like I did all these random races for the next 5 years, the New York Roadrunner Club races. There was this thing called the Spring Fling 4 Miler. I did that once. There was a, down on Wall Street, there was a thing they called the Rat Race. It was 4.01K. I think I don't know if I did another half marathon. I must have done. I did the Staten Island half marathon much later.
We did the New Year's Eve one together.
We did do another race. There was a but that one I just did stay with you.
Yeah.
There was it was 2002. I'm going to say no. Well, maybe
no before that. I think.
Oh yeah, because you saw the shirt. It's like that might have been before the half marathon.
Yeah. I think it was.
Okay, got it. So you still have never run a race. But it wasn't 2000 because we were at Billy Joel in 2000.
Yeah.
So it was 2001. We did this on New Year's Eve. They had a race in Central Park at midnight. It was like 4 miles. We did that together.
Billy Joel, you're talking about going to the concert?
Yeah, he made a CD out of it, the Millennium Concert or whatever they called it, 2000 Years. Yeah, we were there. We were about three rows behind the behind the stage, so when he played Pressure on that synthesizer there, we were like right there.
So you guys are big Billy Joel fans?
I'm a big Billy Joel fan. I think I've made her a big Billy Joel fan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, is that like when you think about states and people and musicians and stuff, when you think of New York...
Yes.
That might be one of the people that people would think of.
That's definitely true.
Like New Jersey.
Okay.
Who?
Bruce Springsteen.
Of course. Yeah. Everybody would say that.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Minnesota.
Prince.
Or Bob Dylan.
Or
one.
Bob Dylan, yeah.
But then get to New York, that's a little trickier because there's so many. But I think Billy Joel will be up there.
Yeah, Billy Joel is definitely up there. And because I'm from New York, I know everything about Billy Joel. You know, specifically we're from like Flushing, but basically Long Island. And so like, you know.
I think Lou Reed too, though.
So you very quickly come to the limits of my music knowledge.
Okay. Well, good thing. That's where we'll probably stop. So
yeah, you know, but I will tell you that I know pretty much every word of every Billy Joel song because I used to, like when I was living in California, I was the only Billy Joel fan I knew. because, like you said, there's no Billy Joel fans in California, at least not anyone I knew.
Yeah.
And one of the things that drew me back to New York was I wanted to be around people that like the Mets, they like Billy Joel, they like, you know, the stuff that you care about when you're 19, when you're 16.
California, what were they into?
Oh, this was 93, 94, a lot of Nine Inch Nails, you know, there was like a couple of kids that were into Metallica, there was a lot of, Guns N' Roses was huge, that kind of stuff, you know, there was a radio station called, we all listened to this radio station, what was it called? Oh my God, this is driving me crazy. Whatever, it was all Guns N' Roses.
Someone's running right now, and they're shouting.
I know,
what
right?
The answer is,
I know.
Julie Acers does that all the time. She'll like send me a message. She'll be like, "I was yelling on the trail," you know.
Someone's going to post it in the Facebook feed that radio station. I'll tell you which one. They'll know exactly. They had like a $10,000 prize whenever they played "Welcome to the Jungle." If you were like to call it into the radio station, they would give you
LA station.
It was an LA station. Yeah, yeah.
So when we were in Mexico,
yeah,
Aaron chartered a boat. And we all went fishing together. And we all threw up, and everyone was miserable. But the guy, the name of the fishing outfit was Captain Jack's.
Nice.
So then I was singing the Captain Jack song.
There
right?
you go. Yeah,
Jack,
yeah,
I'll get you high tonight. But I always had I got two problems with Billy Joel. We'll talk about that, seeing as though you're a big fan.
Okay.
Okay, number one. How did he fuck up this Christy Brinkley? He's like good looking. He's like his life is great. He's got Christy Brinkley as a wife, and then he got like fat and drug addicted and kind of miserable. Like,
yeah.
How does that happen?
We've heard that story before, haven't we? Though it's not just Billy Joel, you know.
He lost all his money.
Yeah, well, he had that producer that took his money from him. Yeah,
was that before or after he lost the girl?
I think this was all around the same time.
Yeah. Did they have kids?
They do have a kid. They have a daughter, and she is actually. An artist herself.
Good looking?
Oh, yeah.
She got the mom's looks.
I think, as I recall, she's a brunette, you know, and I don't have any of her recordings, but I have listened to them, and they, you know.
All right, here's number two.
Okay.
The Piano Man.
Yes. Right?
Now.
The song or the album?
The song.
Okay.
Song Piano Man. And a lot of this came from a discussion I heard with Penn Jillette a long time ago. But when you stop and you really listen to the song, it's kind of like a guy who loathes all the people that are there telling him to play a song for him. And he's just pretty much mocking everybody,
Right? He's telling you who they are. Well, you know, John at the bar is a friend of mine. He gets me my drinks for free.
Yeah.
Or real estate novelist who never had time for a wife.
Yeah.
You know, he's just telling you. To me, it's just like the caricatures of like these people that hang out at this bar, this piano bar where he plays, right?
But then it's like, and then what they're all saying is, play us a song. You're the piano man, you know?
They're
kind of looking down on him. He's kind of looking down on them. And maybe it's because of this guy that says, I want you to play this song for me. I don't know how it goes, but it's sad and it's sweet. And I knew it complete when I was a younger man's clothes. Like, could you give me a little more to go on than that? Like,
that's
it's just,
hilarious.
I don't know how it goes at all, but
funny.
You know, play this song. It's just,
all right. So here is something that I know you have experience with, and that is like having your intentions totally altered, right?
Yes.
So, Penn Jillette definitely sees it that way. And, you know, I don't know what Billy Joel was thinking. You don't know what Penn Jillette doesn't know what Billy Joel was thinking. I don't even know if Billy Joel knows what Billy Joel was thinking when he was doing that. But it's like something you could say, well, that's an interesting perspective, right?
Yeah.
You know, it's like something that you could perhaps see it that way.
But most people don't even think about it. They just sing the song.
Yeah. You know, like to me, I never saw any deep meaning to that song.
Yeah.
It's just a song about some people in a bar.
It doesn't feel like a deep song.
No.
But it's really popular. Is that the most popular song?
It's the one song that everyone knows him as, you know, so it's definitely, I mean, there's a lot of really popular songs that like,
Still Rock and Roll to Me.
I was going to go with, She's Always a Woman. I was going to go, you know, songs that I listen to now, you know, Ballad of Billy the Kid. Well, that's an awesome song.
Uptown Girl.
Uptown, exactly.
Pretty big.
Then they come on the radio, I'm like, I can sing the song, I've heard it a million times. Why don't we listen to something else? You know,
Pressure is really not like a mainstream commercially popular song, I don't think.
No, but it does appear in pop culture you know, every now and then.
Yeah.
I remember watching This Week in Baseball and Pressure and they were playing Pressure about it. So.
And are you a baseball fan?
Not so much anymore. I don't really have, I mean,
Mets.
Mets, right? Yeah, exactly. You know, it's hard to be a Mets fan, but I do get a score update on my phone every night. Because Google gives it to me. And so I see if the Mets won or lost. And so I'm like, that's enough.
All right. So we're on a tangent.
Okay.
We're on a Billy Joel tangent. That's fine. You did a half marathon with your wife. You did a few other shorter races. how do you get hooked into the marathon world? Because at some point you're going to run your first marathon, which is Las Vegas.
Indeed, yes.
And was it the old Las Vegas marathon where they bus you out to Gene and you run back to? Okay, so it's on the Strip.
It starts out on the Strip at like 4 or 5 in the morning before dark, yeah, or before light. Yeah,
there used to be the old Las Vegas marathon. They took you to Gene, Nevada. Which is,
and then you had to run
26 miles west.
Yeah.
You ran to the airport, and you never got anywhere near the Strip.
Yeah,
but it was a cool race.
I remember that was the race right before I ran the race. I think this was the year I ran it, which was 2006, December 10th, 2006. Was the second year they did it down the Strip.
Okay,
and the reason I'm saying that is because the first year they had all these. You know, like I got onto a discussion board about the marathon because I had registered for it.
Where is this? Like Runner's World Forum?
No, like Facebook? The Las Vegas Marathon website had a discussion board on their own website.
Nice. Was it Rock and Roll Marathon at the time then?
Nope. It was just a Las Vegas Marathon, and they had a discussion board, and I actually know a lot of those people that are still on the discussion board. I did an Ironman with one of the people, or two of the people on the discussion board, you know? So, So, and I remember, and it's vague now, this is 11 years ago now, but there was a lot of discussion about like the issues that had happened in the previous year with the new course, and I don't remember what they were, and how they're working to resolve them or not, or whatever, I don't know. But yeah, so that's how I know it was the second year in the new course, and I did so.
What led you to doing a marathon?
Well, I had, basically, it's a continuation of registering for the LA Marathon and registering and not doing it, and registering for the San Diego Marathon, not doing it. I was like, I got to fucking do this thing. You know what I mean? I got to do a marathon. And then I still had that mindset. If I do a marathon, I'll finally be thin. You know what I mean? And this time, I like kind of like kept under wraps. I told my wife, of course, that I was going to run a marathon, but I didn't really tell anyone else. I didn't even tell my parents still live in California. It was in Las Vegas, so I figured it's around Christmas time. It's in early December, so we went out to California. My son had already been born by then, and I'm like, we're just going to take a trip to Vegas. I told my parents. We didn't tell them I was running a marathon. And I just kind of like did not tell anyone. And then I went and ran a marathon. Hey, I ran a marathon. And so I don't know if that has any significance, but
it was unfinished business.
It was kind of unfinished business. And it was also like, just you wait, I'm going to get thin this time. You know,
is that what they would probably call your life story if you had like a title? Just you wait.
I'm going to get thin.
The Steve Jersey.
If I do this, I'm going to get thin. Right. You know. So that's kind of yeah.
So yeah. Was it fun? Glorious?
It was. What was my time? 7 hours, 6:45, something like that.
So a lot of suffering.
You know. No. Well, I mean, it's. I mean, how much suffering? I mean, I remember that I ran the first 10 miles nonstop, and then I probably walked the last 16. And I couldn't have been going fast. I ended up closing the roads, and I was walking on the sidewalks. And I don't know. It was just...
Your wife was there?
Was that? Yes, she was there. In fact, she does what she does. She hangs out with the people, and she gets to know people. She actually saved me some food because I ran out of food. Yeah. It was she's great like that. And I couldn't walk for a couple of days because it was my first time, and we stayed at a friend's house. And
Did you train properly, you think?
No.
Looking back, no.
No, I did a couple of long runs. I think I went up to like 16 miles, but yeah, I didn't. I tried to follow a training plan, and it's probably the best example of me following a training plan that I've ever had, including to today. And I think I only did half the workouts. I think I was like, oh, I should do like a few 16s and maybe an 18 or whatever like that. I mean, you know, I should do like three, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And I end up not doing half of them. And I'm like, I'm just going to go and wing it, see what happens.
Do you think that the training's overrated?
No, I think that for some people, I think training is probably like, if people have, I think that the idea of running in a certain time or like doing your best is overrated. You know what I mean? I think that's fine if that's what you want to do. But I started having much more fun when I stopped. I still worry about time. I still want to do the best I can. But I'm not going to have my life revolve around like how fast I ran that race. I want to make sure that I'm seeing friends and having a good time. And yeah. So I think that aspect of it is overrated. I think that if you want to do that time, if you want to have the best time you've ever had, and you say, I'm going to run a sub 3-hour marathon, then, you know, a training plan with a coach and nutrition, all that stuff is part of the puzzle that you need to get it. I think that, so is the plan overrated? No. Is the goal overrated? Maybe. You know, I don't think there's just a lot, I mean, for me, there's just not a lot of satisfaction in that.
Well, let me tell you where I'm coming from, because you just said that was the most you had ever trained, or the most you had stuck to a plan, let's say.
Yeah.
And I know that if I look at your results and analyze them, which I haven't done, that you have a few races in your career that stand out as, this was just a miraculous job that I did, or I exceeded my expectations. And then you have some where you just ate a dick, you know, like there's a little bit of both.
And
I can't tell, and I race a lot. I can't tell if the ones where I do the best are necessarily the ones where I train the most, or if it's just that I have a good day or bad day, or want it better than other times or whatever. You know, there's not a direct correlation when I look back at all my races where I say, yep, that one I trained for, yep, that one I trained for, yep, that one I trained for. It's more like, whew, I really had a good day that day, and, you know, I had a shitty day there. So I don't know.
I think that for me, like the races that I did the best in were the races where I was the lightest. So, you know, I mean, I think that losing 50 pounds would be much more effective than following a rigid training plan to the letter.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I think and weight is, it's, I mean, for me, for sure.
Like, yeah.
The more weight I lose, the better I get.
Yeah. It makes such a huge difference. And, you know, I don't know why I can't motivate myself to finally lose these last 70 pounds I need to lose. Mm. But because when I was, all right, so.
How much did you weigh when you did your marathon?
320.
Okay.
320.
So you were on the journey.
I was on the journey. Well, if we, you know, the journey is like a roller coaster, right?
We're on the roller coaster.
I was on the roller coaster. I'm still on the roller coaster, you know, and it's kind of like leveling off a little bit, but it's, you know, there's still occasional, but, if we could go back a little bit, like when I started running, I instantly went from like 400 to 350, like that.
Okay.
And then I did, like, remember Bill Phillips and the Body for Life thing?
No.
He had this book. It was this training plan and nutrition plan, and I followed it for everyone. And then I was down to, like, 305. I didn't get below 300, and that's when I met my wife.
Okay.
And then I got off of that, and we both gained weight, and I was probably at one point 350 again, and that's when I started running. And when I trained for the marathon, I finally got below 300 for the first time. And then I've been, like... And that's 10, 12 years ago now.
And just so that everybody knows, you're like fucking 8 feet tall, right? I mean,
I'm 6 foot right now, currently 6'6", 295.
Yeah. So six, I mean, he's not and you're built like a linebacker. You look like someone that should be playing hockey.
Basically. Well, I definitely have when people say that, you know, I don't look like a line. I mean, maybe I could be built like a linebacker,
sure.
But there's definitely a lot of fat.
I mean, 300 on 6'6 looks different than 300 on 5'8.
That's for sure. Yeah, that's for sure.
Everybody has an idea.
That's for sure. But, you know, there's also a different way. Like there's, I mean, like Schwarzenegger could have been 300 if he was 6'6, and he would look a lot different than me.
Yes.
You know what I mean? So that's kind of what I'm getting at there.
So ladies, just so it's clear, he does not look like Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Definitely not.
We're definitely not.
Not even with the black glasses on.
No, for sure.
Yeah.
All right, so first marathon, you were 320.
320, 325, okay. Yeah.
And you had 7 hours, and then your experience from that is, I want to do more of that, I want to do more than that. I mean, what was your takeaway?
I enjoyed it. I had a good time. I don't remember. I think it was just like a natural thing that I would do it more. I never had the mentality I would only do one marathon. I think that message book... message board that I was on, they all had that mentality that they do multiple marathons all the time. So I,
this is 2006.
So I just kind of like adopted that mentality. It never even occurred to me that I would only do one marathon that I remember. So yeah. So I did others.
At that point, then do you like sometimes people have the marathon and then they say, okay, now I'm going to train more. Now I'm going to do it differently. Now I'm going to do, or did, was it just, you know, I'm just going to keep doing this and, you know, have fun.
I think every single, especially like 2007, 2008, I had that mentality, like I was going to train more or do more. I never actually did, you know. I did go out and do the races and have a good time.
Did you have a goal going back and doing more marathons? Did you like, I mean, some people say I want to do a marathon in every state. Some people want to set one to break 4 hours. I mean, like, or, you know, lose a certain number of pounds or anything like that. Or did you just want to do more marathons?
I just wanted to do more marathons. I also wanted to lose a certain number of pounds. I wanted to do them as fast as I could, but I didn't have like numbers, if that's what you're getting at.
Were ultras on your radar screen at
Yes.
all?
Yes. Ultras were on my radar screen all the way from back in 1996,
Why?
97.
How?
I met a guy, and I have not heard or seen from him since.
It's going to be really weird if I know him.
No, yeah, really? That'd be crazy. This guy's name is Herb Groom. No. Someone out there might know him. I don't know. And he said that he did multi-days. And I'm like, this is the weirdest thing I've ever heard of. And I remember, and he told me a story of how they do it. And now that I do multi-days, I've never heard of this happening since. But I remember him telling me, like, yeah, I would just run, and what you would do is you would get your sleep while you're running, and you would take turns. You'd have your hand on the shoulder of someone else while that person is running unconscious, and you're just, like, following along with him. I never heard of that happening since. But this guy told me about that, and I believed him, because why wouldn't you? You know what I mean? He only tells me he does these multi-day runs, right? And so it was on my, it was something that I had come across. And so he told me about it, and then, of course, you know, I Yahooed it because Google didn't exist at the time. Or maybe it did. I don't know what time.
I remember that.
Yeah. Or AltaVista'd it or Excited it or whatever it was at the time. And I came across this ultra running community. So I was aware that ultra exists. I had read all about the Barkley. That was, you know, like these stories, like whoever had the Barkley still doesn't have a website, but like the fan sites for the Barkley or whatever, you know, someone had, you know, with results and whatever.
This is like late 90s?
We're talking 96, 97.
Okay.
Maybe 98. Anyway, so we had, I came across the ultra list. I don't know if I had subscribed at the time, but you know, I came across, like, I think it might've been like the Stan Jensen site or the ultra runner site, that one,
like
with the
predecessor of one of those, or
yeah, something like that, where you, and I did a lot of reading because it was interesting to me. So I was aware that ultras existed, and I always had in the back of my mind, I wanted to do one. And you know, actually, it wasn't even in the back of my mind. It was something that I knew I would do.
Okay.
You know?
And you were, you went to school for tech?
I actually didn't go to college. I mean, I only went to community college. I didn't finish.
So you, but you're an engineer. You're software engineer?
Yes.
And were you into that back then? Or, I mean, have you always been like a computer tech guy?
Yes, more or less. Like I said, my first job was CompUSA. Actually, my first job was a fabric store, but my first, you know, I worked at CompUSA, and then I worked at an internet service provider. I was doing tech support, and then one of the customers of the ISP needed a website, and so I learned HTML, and I did a website for them. This is 98, 99, probably.
These olden days.
Yeah, and I, you know, this is
Netscape Navigator.
Yeah, exactly, that kind of stuff. IE3 with the waves and anyway, so. And it just kind of like snowballed into a career. Now I do, you know, Scala and you know, I do engineering, you know, what I consider to be engineering.
Well, like, so what, I mean, we were having a discussion because, you know, Tony, don't really 100%. I mean, I guess I don't know what any of these people do really, but they all work in tech. Tony, I think he works for like a high end, like they make websites for like Ford or, you know, like
crazy stuff like that.
And he does programming and he does web design and stuff like that. And then Kyle does programming and security and system administrating, I think. And Rachel wants to go to school to become a developer and stuff like that. So
nice.
What do you actually do? Like explain your job.
So I am. So what I do.
Sorry, Rachel, Tony, and Kyle, if I fucked up what your jobs are.
So I write programs that run on the servers behind the applications and websites you visit. So when you visit a website, what your computer receives is a markup language, well, probably along with some JavaScript that's going to render the page on your website. Behind that, there's like there's a layer underneath that only runs on the server. Although now that even that line is being blurred. And that is actually where, at least traditionally, a lot of the business logic for the website or the app that you use exists. So what I do is I write that software that runs on those servers. And so sometimes we're referred to as back-end developers, although, and that's where I specialize. When I spent 5 years at Hertz, and I was exclusively a back-end developer at Hertz. Now I do what you would call full stack, where I do like some of the front-end code too, some of the dev operations too, which is like the deployment and taking, you know, so it's a whole, like, now it's like the holistic thing. The, you know, every aspect of the application from the rendering on the browser or whatever device you're using back to the server code, like the...
So like Tony on the Bibs, and just, you know, this episode we brought to you in part by Bibs, you know.
Nice.
All the race reports in one place, www.bibz.net. If you're out there and you do a race report, if it's a 5K, 10K marathon, ultra marathon, Ironman, timed event, I don't care what it is, go to Bibs, create a profile, put your race reports in. Our dream is to get all the race reports in one place, all of them, so that you can search for races, you can search by distance, you can search by city, you can search by anything you want, and find races and learn about them. You can comment, you can share them on Facebook. It's going to be awesome. Go on there and check it out. So Bibs, Tony... It does the full stack, right? Because he's doing everything.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's like that.
Certainly he did the full stack.
Okay.
If you're saying he did everything, then yeah.
Like he doesn't have any help.
Yeah, this is not a... What this Bibs thing is probably not a really simple thing, too. So, I mean, it's impressive. It's an impressive thing do by yourself.
He works all the time on it.
Yeah, to do that on your own, it's a big deal. And especially to do it for no pay, like as like... You know, I mean, I'm sure he's expecting something, but right now he's not receiving money for it.
Right.
So that's like really,
it's part of this company, you know?
Yeah.
It's an outgrowth of the production company that puts on this podcast is making the Bibs. So we're going to have that as another wing of this.
Well, what I'm saying is it's a full-time job on top of his full-time job where he does that for pay and then he goes home and he does it and he does this.
And he hates doing what he does for work at home.
Oh, you know, exactly. I've been doing this now for 20 years. It's impressive to see someone like, you know, doing that kind of thing. Cause that means, I'm sure he's like, I've never met him. I've never seen his work, but I'm sure that.
You've never been to Bibs.net?
I have not been there yet.
You're going to have to go there.
I will have to go there. Well,
this is our project.
Yeah, I know.
Open to the world too. It's free and you know.
Well, on the drive over here, I've listened to the episode where you said it's finally open to the world. So but I have not opened my web browser since. So yeah. I did hear you guys talk about it about a month ago, and you said you were opening up to like, you send invitations out to 100 people or so.
Something like that, yeah.
And so, but I didn't have any race reports to write. And so I was like, you know, we'll let that happen. So
he just like wanted people to crash it. Like that was his big
thing. Oh, he wanted, yeah, okay.
Yeah, let's just have the thing fall down and crash all the time. And, you know, but it's interesting too, like from a business standpoint of having, and now everyone's sleeping, me is the guy who's like what I bring is the social media and then, you know, I bring the users.
You're the personality.
Yeah. And without the users, you just have this really cool app that no one's ever going to use.
Yeah.
So
that's
the
for sure.
Synergy together of that with the podcast. And then the idea is that if people that listen to this podcast, like yourself, sign up, make race reports, share them on Facebook and stuff, then we can have a episode or a segment where we read the best race reports and like create like a synergy. So like it all kind of comes together.
That's brilliant.
And you know, it's kind of like, it's like the podcast. It's like, and it really reminds me of this conversation I had with I met the guys that invented Hoka, like the two of them. And just, it's the idea that it's a good idea that should be done for the sake of doing. And no one, like, we weren't sitting in a room going, how can we get rich? Maybe we'll make this, you know? Mm-hmm. It was just like, why doesn't this exist?
This is a need, and you want to fill it. Yeah.
Someone has, like, they were running down mountains and saying, we need to make a shoe that can run down mountains. And that's how the Hoka came, you know?
Yeah.
I said, people that don't have any running friends need friends to run with. Let's make a podcast. You know? So it's like all part of the same thing.
Yes.
You know, and I think that that's why it's probably going to work because our motive is, you know, let's get all the race reports in one place.
Yeah. I think that that's brilliant. I think that you're doing it for the right reason. Well, not that my opinion matters, but it seems to me that this is like the kind of cool project that is, that really excites me. That's, you know, because there's, you know, I don't know.
It ties in with what we're doing here, too.
You know,
it's like, like you're a guy who listens to a lot of podcasts.
Yes.
You know, and to have someone like you, you know, you realize that you would love to listen to a show with you on it. You know, not yourself, but like someone's.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, now I see what you mean.
Everyday interesting people that maybe didn't win the race.
Well, that's why I listened to this podcast specifically. And I've, yeah, exactly.
And there's a hole from DFL, you know?
Yes.
Did you know him?
What's that?
Did you know him?
Yes.
Did you know him well?
Not well, but I've run with him, and you know, he came down to New Jersey a couple times.
We're talking about Eric Sherman from DFL Ultra Running, who died probably about a year ago.
He died exactly a year ago, a few days ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is just terrible.
Shocking.
Yeah, it was like out of the blue. Yeah, that was rough.
Did you know his family?
No. I only knew him, and most of our conversations were off that DFL roundtable thing that he did.
Yep.
But I did.
Were you on the roundtable too?
Yes, I was.
Well, we ran it together.
That's how you and I met.
Oh, that's embarrassing.
Yeah, that's how we met. I'd never heard of you or the podcast before.
Until we
And you were probably eight episodes in.
Okay.
So I went back and I.
Oh, no, no, no. You mean you heard about me from my podcast with Eric about the turkey trot?
We did the.
Oh, so now this is embarrassing to you.
Wait, no. The first time we did it. And I met.
That's not the first time I was on DFL.
So maybe it was a turkey trot.
There's a whole episode about me going.
But did that come? I thought that your episode was after we were on the round table together.
It was like one of the first episodes. I think it was really early.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, whatever it was, who knows?
Anyway, it was cool because he was East Coast.
Yeah.
Everyday runner.
Yes.
He wasn't just like, you know, blowing.
And he was dealing with the same kind of issues and struggles I was dealing with.
Exactly.
He had, you know, he was dealing with like his weight. He was dealing with like, you know, like. Making cutoffs, he was dealing with the kind, you know, that kind of
trying
stuff.
To figure out what kind of race he could finish and
yeah.
not finish. And
like, oh man,
not like just like people that say, "Oh, I'll go do this and I'll go do that." It was like, you know, do you think I could make it? You know,
yeah. I'll tell you. I mean, that's exactly the. Here's the thing. I mean, when I signed up for a 50 miler, I made sure that one coincided with a 100 miler because I knew I'd have the 100 mile cutoff.
Yeah,
you know, and I know I'm not the only person who's done that.
What was that race?
That was the Grand Teton 50.
First time? First 50?
The first 50 I attempted. I didn't finish it.
And that's Lisa's race?
Yes, Lisa Smith-Batchel.
I wish they would bring that race back, because that looked pretty.
It was an awesome race.
Is it roads?
There was about a mile or two of road per loop, and the loops were 25 miles.
All right, so we got to bridge the gap, though. How did we get there from?
Okay, let's back.
He's doing marathon.
I did my marathon in 2006. 2007, I did three more marathons.
Which ones can you just tell
I me? Did Breakers, which is in Newport, Rhode Island. Beautiful race. I did Philadelphia Marathon, and I did. Oh my God. No. I don't remember.
Okay.
Wow, this is going to bother me. Anyway, 2008 spring, I did Lake Werramog 50K. It's my first ultra.
So did you do that because you're you're conscious of the fact that you want to do this timed event, this staged event that you had thought about early on, or is this just the next progression?
This is just the next progression. Okay. It was like naturally, you know, I'm going to do a 50K.
Okay.
Right? Because I don't know if at the time I thought I'd ever do a 100 miler. Maybe I didn't let myself think I would ever do a 100 miler.
Did you know they existed?
Yes. Okay. For sure. But I definitely wanted to do the next thing, which was a 50K, and I knew I would do a 50-miler. So I went out and I did Lake Werramog 50K, which has 100K coincided with it, so I had nice long cutoffs, and it took me like 8 hours to do it. And at that race, I met people like Andy Cable. I met Fred Muriolo that day. Fred Muriolo has become one of my best friends in terms of running partners, and best friend in period in life, and he's also a great running partner. I met him at my first ultra. And it was just like, I remember I spent 15 miles with this guy, Andy Cable, who I just saw again a few months ago, you know, and it's just like, man, my first ultra with you. And we basically spent 15 miles together in my first ultra, you know, it was great. It was awesome.
So 50K,
then, Labor Day 2008 was a Grand Teton 50 miler where I dropped at 37. That's where I met Lisa Smith-Batchel for the first time.
Why'd you drop?
Oh, I dropped because I was sad and pathetic, and I could have finished it. But at the time, I was sure I would not finish.
Okay.
I was not injured. I was just exhausted and like way in over my head, and it was a mountain ultra. And you know, I remember coming in at mile 25, and I was going to drop then. And Lisa, you know, kind of like got in my face, like, "What do you need? What can I do?" You know, Lisa is. I cannot say enough nice things about Lisa Smith-Batchel. And that's from 2000. That's from 9 years ago. You know, she is one of the most wonderful people I've ever met. She got
to have her on. She hasn't done like a lot of podcasts in the last 5 years. So the younger generation, they don't really know who she is.
I know.
So I think it's time.
I know. Well, she is a wonderful human being. She is like, I have not talked to her in many years right now. She lives in Idaho. I live in New Jersey, right? But she was like one of the first people I've met. Like, all right. So that weekend, right? It was very clear to me that in ultras, the highest value in ultra running is, you know, tenacity. You know, not quitting. It doesn't matter if how long it takes you. It doesn't matter how fast you are. It matters that you didn't quit, right? So I come into this thing, and I come down off, come back in a mile 25, in Grand Teton 50, and I'm like, I need to drop. I'm horrible. I suck. Whatever, right? Well, yeah, right.
So
yeah.
Anything you can do to convince her that you're bad enough.
And I didn't think she would care, right? Because I'm like in the back of the pack. I'm trailing the race. There's like a bunch of other things. She's like busy race directing, you know, whatever. You know, I'm like, I'm going to go in. I'm going to turn on my bib, and I'm going to go home, and that's going to be the, and I'm going to have, you know. And she got in my face. She's like, what can I do? What can I, you know? And she was like, and she like totally went into like coach mode or whatever it is she does. What the important thing about that I want to express that she did was that she proved to me that she actually gave a shit. That I continued. She wasn't just doing her job, making sure I kept going. She cared that I would continue. And that was deeply, deeply meaningful to me.
But not meaningful enough for you to finish the race.
it got me back out there.
Yeah.
And where I did drop, she wasn't there. I dropped at this parking lot a couple miles away from where she was at the headquarters. So
is that the first DNF?
I think so, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that was my first DNF.
Did it bother you at all? Did it haunt you?
Yeah, I went back the next year and finished.
Okay.
Yeah, and I was like, unfinished business, you know. DNFs don't bother me like that anymore, but, you know.
Yeah, I'm going to make a note of that. We'll have to revisit that.
Yeah, we do. They don't bother me in that same way. We'll revisit that.
I'm fascinated. I'm fascinated by the subject matter of the DNF.
Yes.
And the psychology behind it and the social media, the game that people play. And then it's always like this long post about how they, you know, like, and then they let the lions out and then the hailstorm started and then everyone's like, oh, but you're still a hero and everything's wonderful. You know, it's just like this whole, like the insecurity is kind of, instead of just like, I suck today, you know, like I had a bad day. I had a really bad day. I wasn't having fun anymore. I just wanted to quit. I didn't want to, like me and Tony, the from here, from this show, we got together. I'm sure I talked about this on the show before Kettle Moraine. Mm-hmm. We're like, let's have a meeting. All right. We're like, got done with that run. Like, let's talk about like, what are the acceptable bases for us to drop out of Kettle Moraine next weekend? One, physical injury. Two, time cutoff. Three, don't feel like running anymore. You know, I mean, because I'm a lawyer.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
It's fascinating to me that there are so many people that want to express and find their value to the world through running.
Yeah,
like you and me. Okay, overweight guys with full time jobs.
Mm-hmm.
If I want to really impact the world, am I going to do it through running?
No.
Is it the place where I'm going to really be able to show the world what I'm made of? I mean, that's where this whole everybody's a hero thing comes from, is this, you know, whatever I do is off. You know what? Most of my performances suck. I just ran the Minnesota Voyager 50 miler.
Okay.
And I saw the race director for Zumbro Superior Sawtooth. His name's John Storkamp. He's this really epic dude. He's a great runner. He's a hard ass guy. He's great. He's, you know, he's finished Arrowhead 9 times.
Wow.
Massive. Just,
that's hardcore.
He's a legend. And he was coming, it's an out and back. He's coming back and I'm going out and I'm towards the back and I've been sick for a while now and I'm at the like walking and miserable stage and the sun's beating on me. I'm having the worst day ever. All right. And he looked up at me as he came crossing paths with me, and he looked at me, and I will bet you, and it's probably not true, but I will still bet you that his thought was, wow, he laughed. He like laughed when he saw me, like, why do you keep bothering to do this? You know, like there's Coomer. He's in the back. He's miserable. He's barely moving, you know, and you just keep doing this. Like, what is this? Like, this is my 13th race of the year. You know, like, what is wrong with you? You know? And I just think it's funny.
Yeah.
You know? Like, because that's who I am.
How do, like, when you all, do you ever wonder, like that, like, what do thin runners think when they see fat runners, you know? You know, especially fat runners who, like, have accomplished something, you know?
But they don't like it when you pass them.
Well, I have noticed that. When I pass someone, they speed up. Yeah. I guess every fat runner has seen that.
I've heard people say when I had my headphones on, mm-hmm. oh my God, now look who's beating us. You know? Like, that's a bad sign.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I don't know.
I don't know, man. Whatever. You know, it's fun. It's one of those fun things to think about, but it doesn't really matter.
Do you think, like, when you're out there running, like, I'm big, therefore people don't think I'm a real runner? Are you, like, self-conscious about that at all?
I'm not self-conscious about it because it's ridiculous. Like, what does that even mean, first of all? What is a real runner? You know what I mean?
Do you ever want to, like, turn around to somebody, like, maybe you're, like, in New York and you're, like, running and it's, like, all these, like super sexy joggers all around. Do you ever want to, like, look at them and say, listen, I ran over 200 miles consecutive. Do you ever want to, like, tell them that?
You know what? The thought has occurred to me.
Okay.
If I'm honest, the thought has occurred to me. Yeah.
They're out there doing their 3-mile run.
I'm out there doing a 3-mile run. I'm doing 11 minutes a mile and these guys are just like flying by. It's like, whoa. And it's really impressive to me.
Yeah.
Like let's not bury how impressive it is that these guys, like when you run in Central Park, you will routinely see guys knocking out 5:30s just in their training run.
Is that where you run at lunch?
No, but when I do run in Central Park, I see it every single time.
Yeah.
And it is super impressive. And here I am lumbering along. Maybe if I'm having a good day, I'm running 9:30s. More likely I'm running 11s. And it's just like, what do I look like to them?
Yeah.
And
don't you know who I am?
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Sometimes I wear a 100-mile shirt because I think it, just because, only because I think it lends me credibility. I don't know if it matters.
Yeah.
You know, in fact, I'm deeply suspicious that it doesn't.
Yeah.
No one gives a shit. You know.
I mean, I thought about that one. Like the first time I was training for my first marathon, I was self-conscious about like I don't look like a runner, and people don't know that I'm a runner, or things like that. And then I think I reached a point. It was maybe like after I did my first 50K,
yeah.
where I just kind of said, I mean, maybe I have like fleeting thoughts, like we're talking about, but like as a general proposition, my attitude is, I'm a runner, you know, and like, fuck them, you know? I started to believe in myself more. But, you know, that's a thing. I think about that more, and this is going to be really sexist, I know. Go ahead, send your emails to 10junkmiles@gmail.com. I think about it more like with women who are like self-conscious and like don't want to go out there and run because they think that they're not, you know, the other, you know, because girls are kind of judgy about each other a lot more than we are. Like, I don't walk into a room and say, oh, look at that guy with the abs. Fuck that guy. He's an asshole. You know, girls might sometimes feel that way. And I think that they're a little bit more fear of being judged too.
Okay.
Know, like what they're wearing or how they look in their outfit or, you know, like, I don't want to wear a swimsuit. People are going to look at me and think, you know. But I think that everybody should just want to get out there and run. You know,
yeah.
I mean, that's the issue. Like if you look at the end of the marathon, you see all the different body types of people, you know, I kind of like it when you see somebody who's overweight and doesn't give a shit and they're just
yeah.
like, fuck you, I'm running anyway. You know,
well, but do you like that because you're also overweight and don't give a shit? Or is that,
I think I like it because it speaks to the non self-conscious part of me,
yeah.
you know? Cause like sometimes I'll have that fight with my wife, not a fight, but you know, like where she'll be like, you know, oh, you know, you should button that up or you should tuck that in or, you know, blah, blah. And I'm just like, I don't care. I'll walk around looking like a homeless person, you know, fuck these people. So, but you know, I just think that I think it's a shame if someone doesn't want to run or, you know, doesn't want to do an event or is afraid to like go to a group run because they think they're not going to fit in or because they're, you know, they don't look right or they don't have the right gear or whatever the case may be.
Right. Well, I think what you're really speaking to is like, you know, this is what it means when you say that running is an individual sport, you know, like when you say individual sport, it usually is meant as opposition to a team sport, right? But to me, like you put 30,000 people in a marathon, almost all of them are not competitive. So what is it? So what's the individual sport? They're not, you know, the individual sport is like what their individual, it's them individually. Right.
Yeah.
And when you are saying something like that, like when I say Man, it's just like if they would only understand like how much fun it is to not worry about pace. I'm projecting my own running experience and my individuality onto them, mm-hmm. and vice versa. So it's not fair to either of us. And I don't know if there is, if you know, I mean, and I don't think it's what's the point I'm trying to make here? I think that basically. Instead of trying to, I think it's helpful to recognize that, you know, that whenever you make that kind of a value judgment, like whether the fat guys run along and he's not a real runner, whatever that means, or the fat guys run along observing the fast runner saying, man, that guy must be trained really hard to get sub 3 hours in a marathon that no one's going to care about. Right? That's me projecting, like, I don't give a shit what people think about me onto that person, you know? Whereas that person, who knows what his motivations are?
Yeah.
Or her motivations are.
He might just be that fast.
Yeah, he may just be that fast, right? But, you know, it's kind of like, that's the reason why I like it. It's, you know, once you've done it enough and you kind of realize it, you could totally go in that group training run and they'll totally hang with you. And it's because it's a training run. And people who have been around long enough seem to be okay with running 12 minutes a mile with a new person just to get to know him and hang out and have a good time.
That's how I met Tony.
Yeah, exactly.
He was the last guy in the training run way in the back. And I was like, mm-hmm. look at that guy. He's all by himself, struggling yeah. in the back. That's no fun. I'll go run with him, you know, and that's how we got to be friends.
Well, and that's and I'll tell you, Tony Portera did the same thing with me.
Oh, see, yeah. I was going to ask you if you knew him.
Yeah, so we could, with Tony, I mean...
Did you listen to my interview with him?
I did.
Okay.
I did, yeah.
He's a good guy. I like him.
He's a good guy. I like to say he's taught me everything I know about ultra running, and I say that because it's true. So
sure.
If we go back to the story.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, just because...
Well, let me make a point on what you were saying, though, before we move on.
Sure.
I don't want to forget it, and that's that, you know, I think that what you're saying, and if you're not, then you could tell me, but my thing is... If your thing is to run as fast as you can because it makes you feel good about you, that's great. I'm not shitting on that at all.
Yeah.
What I'm shitting on is the notion that I should want what you want. You know, it's that I can 100% put myself in your shoes and see that if I had your kind of ability, I might relish in coming in the top 10 or running a sub 3 hour marathon or whatever the case may be and see the value and the fun of that. But at the same time, you have to turn around and look at me and say, I can see the value of saying, fuck the time goals. I'm just here for the journey. I'm having fun. I'm meeting people in the back. I'm cracking jokes. I'm, you know, enjoying I'm having fun, and I'm not going to, you know, the mindset of, I was talking to someone about comrades, and I said that, you know, when I went to comrades, I was looking at all the different medals and, you know, the different time cutoffs for all the different medals and thinking about which one I wanted to get and how fast I had to run. And then I just like stopped and said, I'm only going to run across Africa once.
Yeah.
Why am I going to look at my watch?
Yeah.
You know, fuck that. I'm just going to run.
Yeah.
And like, you have to respect that view too. Cause there's also a guy that says, I'm only going to comrades once. I'm getting the silver medal. You know, I'm going sub 8 hours.
Right. Right.
So,
yeah, obviously you're right.
Obviously. We got to have him as a guest more often. It's obvious you're right.
Obviously that's the case. I would just be careful to most of the really, really fast people I know aren't like that.
Aren't
douchey.
No. Okay.
You know what I mean? Sure. That's the only thing I would say.
Portero's pretty fast. Is he douchey?
No.
No.
So. No, he's not douchey. Okay. No. funny. And by the way, I knew Tony. I mean, he was still fast, but he's gotten a lot faster.
Yeah.
You know, and so it, I mean, I saw him run I think he went sub 19 at Umstead 1 year. I mean, that's just super, so impressive.
How slow was he when you first met him?
Well, he was under 24, but I don't remember where he was, but he wasn't under, I don't think he was under 20.
Yeah.
And he went under 19, man.
Yeah.
Under 19 and 100.
No sugar, no grain, brother.
Holy fucking shit, man.
That's what did it.
No. I don't know if, maybe that was after the NSNG thing.
I think so.
Yeah. I don't know if it was or not.
All right, so let's go back.
All right, let's go back.
You do 50K, you're going 50 mile.
Yes. And So Grand Teton Races, Tony was there, but I didn't meet him. 2009, I went back to Grand Teton Races, finished it. Tony was, oh, no, 2000, we had to look at Ultra Sign Up. I think 2008 I did the Grand Teton Races, failed. 2009 I went back to, or 2007 I did, oh,
nine.
Man.
You finished in nine.
I finished in nine.
19th place.
Out of like 24, right?
Well, it doesn't say that.
So it was like 17 and change.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was there. I didn't meet him in that either. The following spring, I guess it was 2010, I went ahead and registered for the Rocky Raccoon 100.
You did other races before that, though. You did JFK before that.
So that's exactly right. So Grand Teton was my first 50-mile attempt. JFK was my first 50-mile finish.
Okay.
And then after JFK, that was also 2008.
Mm-hmm.
And then the following year, I went back to Grand Teton, and I did that 50-mile and finished.
Okay.
Was there any 50s in between there? Nope. I don't remember.
No, nope.
I should look at my own ultra.
So then you're kind of hooked in. Now you're in.
Now I'm in.
And now are you doing any more marathons, or are you just ultras now?
I'm still doing marathons every now and then. But you know, definitely my focus is, there was one year, it might have been 2009 or 2010, where I basically did a marathon or an ultra every month or close to it. You know,
it just
worked out that way.
Too?
Was that?
You've done a lot of marathons in your life.
I wouldn't say a lot. I've done probably 20 to 25.
That's a lot for most people.
I know for most people, but you know, in the circle, in the people, you know, the circles of these listeners, you know what I mean?
What was your favorite marathon?
Big Sur.
Oh yeah.
How can you not be here? Right.
Fucking awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Have you done New York?
I have done New York. I did it in 2009, I think. Yeah.
Good, bad, medium.
The thing I remember about New York is that I was running through Brooklyn, and the crowds were so loud, I couldn't hear. I was trying to listen to a podcast, and I couldn't hear the podcast.
Jack Miles.
Yeah, that's right. But it was so, I had my volume on all the way high, like, and I still could not hear what was in my headphones because the crowds were so loud. And that was so impressive. I ran big city marathons. I ran Chicago. I ran Philadelphia. I think, did I run another big city marathon? I don't know. The crowds just did not even compare.
Yeah.
To New York. New York was
like one of the few marathons left on my. I want to do LA too. I've never done LA.
Yeah, I've never done LA either. I registered once, but you know.
I like running in OC. I like running in that the Balboa Pier, the Balboa Peninsula.
Oh yeah, sure.
Newport.
Yeah.
We had a case when I was a young lawyer involving Deloitte and Touche, and they had an office in Costa Mesa.
Mm.
And it was like my first year being a lawyer, and my boss sent me out to Costa Mesa. I spent like fucking 3 months staying at the West Coast Plaza in Costa Mesa.
Life is rough, man.
I know. I was scared because my credit card didn't have the capacity to build the shit to get the reimbursement.
That's hilarious.
It's like fucking $300 a night.
I know, you know? Right?
I'm like, what? And then I would go, because my part of the case was so small, then I would go to the, the jogging path on Balboa Island?
No.
Okay. So if you go all the way east, there's like an island, and there's like a path that goes up and down to where the piers are, Balboa piers there. That's where I went for my honeymoon. But I would go run back and forth there. They had like an AA meeting at dusk every night. It was kind of cool. So
okay.
Anyway, back to the thing. So LA and New York are both on my list though. But I don't know New York. So I think it would be fascinating to me because the whole while I would just be
running a marathon in a city is a good place to explore.
Yeah.
I mean I definitely had that experience when I ran Chicago. I actually wouldn't mind doing Chicago again just because I'd like to revisit the city of Chicago. But
you know, we're doing it next month and we're going to eat while we do it.
The Retaste of Chicago?
Yes.
I am so interested in that. If I could get to Chicago to do that, holy shit.
I think it's like the 23rd of September.
Oh, man. If I could be in town for it, I would love to do that. That's my two favorite things, food and running.
We did the Krispy Kreme challenge this weekend.
I saw that.
Like 1 day late for that.
Oh, man.
That's not that hard.
Oh, yeah.
Have you done a beer mile?
Yes.
I mean, beer mile is, of the three, I think the beer mile is the hardest thing.
The hard thing about beer mile is you're breathing hard and trying to chug a beer.
Yeah.
Like the first, I mean, I don't have the nausea issue some people have, but by the third lap, after you've done two laps all out, you have to, you're still, and have you ever tried to drink anything, much less a beer, when you're like that? That's the hard thing.
Well, and I'm doing O'Doul's. So yeah. I'm not yeah, getting exactly. intoxicated. Exactly. When third and fourth, I'm just miserable. There's just yeah. so much stuff inside of you. It's well, ridiculous.
I'm actually okay with that. It's just the drinking part. That's what, you know, I don't know. But I yes, to answer your question, I've done beer miles. I love them. I'm always up for a beer mile anytime once someone wants to do one.
Krispy Kreme Challenge, have you done that?
I have not done it, but I would.
You like donuts?
I do. Who doesn't like donuts? Okay.
Well, yeah. I don't today. It's going to take me a while to get that. And then for retaste, it's, you know, so you got cheeseburger from the Billy Goat. You got Chicago-style hot dog from the Wiener Circle. And Sather Cinnamon Bun. Luminati's Pizza, which you just had. What do yeah. you think?
Oh, man.
As a New York guy.
All right. So as a New York guy, okay.
He did a deep dish Chicago pizza.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a funny story, by the way. I was talking about, oh, we're an hour early. As a New York guy who's eaten pizza all over the city and all five boroughs of Brooklyn and everything else, and then I had the best pizza I ever had in New Haven, Connecticut. And all your Connecticut listeners right now are nodding in agreement.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. They're like, yeah, we know.
Well, we got some New England people, too. So that,
yeah, exactly.
They'll chime in on that. Yeah, do you know the LeBlancs? Jeff
that?
LeBlanc, Samantha LeBlanc.
I know of them. Okay. I'm sure that if I saw them, I'd you know, yeah, yeah, yeah. Matching names to faces is hard for me. I have like some sort of mental block there. But
so, and I will not shit on. I mean, I will tell you this. I am from Milwaukee. I'm not Italian, so that educates my view. The best pizza I've had is in Racine, Wisconsin, which is oh, right wow. over the border. And there's like some Italian people that lived there, you know, way, way back in the day. And it's like thin crust, not yeah. thick crust. And it's spicy and you can taste it all the way back here in your mouth.
Nice.
It's very, very good nice. Thin crust pizza. In Chicago, my favorite pizza is not where you went. It's a place called Pequod's. But you went to Luminati's. What did you get?
I got the, well, we got it large, and it was half of the Lou's.
Oh, the Lou. Yeah, that's
and good. And the other half was the one they said was like the Chicago, like the it had sausage and extra cheese. Like,
was it the sausage wheel, or was it the sausage crumbled?
It was crumbled sausage, okay. and they called it like authentic Chicago pizza. It's like,
okay.
It, the menu definitely made it sound like this is what a Chicago deep dish pizza is.
Okay.
So.
And what'd you think?
I thought it was amazing. Yeah. No, okay, so listen, I will not shit on Chicago pizza.
All right.
You know, because at the end of the way, it's pizza. I love it. So it was really good. The tomatoes were, I remember the tomatoes were really
chunks of tomatoes.
Yeah, yeah. They were, it was quality tomatoes, you know? And so, yeah, I will not shit. I liked it a lot. It was really good. I will admit, I didn't make the joke, the John Stewart joke. This is a bread bowl.
It is. Yeah, I mean, in that place, it's not as bready.
No, but but the crust was great. I really liked it. It's a funny joke, and so I say it, but it actually genuinely was really good pizza.
That's a solid pie.
Yeah, you'd be hard pressed to find something as good in New York. There is good pizza in New York that's better than that. I'm sure there's pizza in Chicago is better than that. It's just, but that was really
Pequod's
good.
Is better. Like if you come back, we'll take it to Pequod's, and that's like not a place that the tourists all go.
Okay.
It's a place that it's really good.
Okay.
And but we get Luminati's a lot, and they have an NSNG pizza.
Do they really?
The whole crust is sausage.
Oh my God.
So it's just like sausage that's within the pizza on top of the
that's
sausage.
Hilarious.
And the first time I ordered it, I was like, all right, she's like, well, what do you want on it? I'm like, I don't know, like pepperoni, mushroom, and sausage. And she's
sausage on a
sausage. It's already sausage, you know? You don't need any more sausage. But fully NSNG pizza. It's pretty
badass.
Awesome.
That's pretty badass.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
All right. So it was a good experience. And those also you can, if you have the dough, no pun intended, you can have two half-baked dry iced pizza shipped to your house. Anywhere in the US.
I saw that they ship it. Oh, man.
So when my friends leave Chicago, sometimes I send them to them as a nice treat.
Nice. That's so cool.
All right, so it's going to take us like 9 hours to do this podcast. Hey, and while we're taking a break, okay, so we talked about Bibs, brought to you by Bibs. Have you ever done a review of the show?
Yes, I have.
Okay, so you go to iTunes and you do a review, and the reason why it really helps the show is that it moves it up in the ever-confusing iTunes rankings, which no one can figure out.
It's an algorithm.
And yeah. then more people see the show, and then more people download it, and that really helps us out. So if you haven't rated and reviewed the show, and it's really weird, there's only like 300 reviews, which is a lot, you know, for a small podcast like this. But you would think that with the thousands of people listening, there'd be more people. Go review it. If you want to help out the show, there's another way. You can go to Patreon. You can donate like $1 an episode or whatever. You don't get anything extra for that at all. We don't give you any exclusive content. We don't. Some of these podcasts, they say, you know, just for our patrons. I'm not doing that because, you know, fuck it. If you have money and you like the show, go in there and give us some money. But the easiest and the best way to help the show is to go to Amazon.com. Do you buy things on Amazon?
Sure.
Fuck, who doesn't, right?
Exactly.
You go to Amazon, but you instead of just going to Amazon, you go through the 10 Junk Miles page. So go to 10junkmiles.com. There's an Amazon banner. Click the banner. Go buy all the shit you normally buy, and then it gives us money, and it really helps us out. So,
by the way, if you have an ad blocker on your web browser, you have to turn it off on the 10 Junk Miles page in order to see the Amazon banner.
Oh.
That's a tip I had to figure out in order to do that.
It's just the tip with Steve Terzi.
That's right.
Or if you're on the Reddit page, there's a permanent link too. Like that, they put one in the side, like a link to our...
Okay.
Like to click
the banner. Yeah, perhaps. Yeah,
so,
yeah.
But figure it out and then bookmark it and then just do all your shopping that way and then just buy all the shit you normally buy and you're totally helping us out, which is awesome. So those are the ways that you can help us. Go to Bibs, go to Bibs and create a profile and put some race reports on there. I'm serious. It's really, really cool. And then give us a review and that's it. And I'm not going to read any reviews. I was going to start reading reviews on the one-on-one episodes, but I thought I just want to put the advertisement in the middle there. That's enough.
Okay.
We'll do that in the other ones. So go ahead and do that. All right. You didn't know if you were going to do 100 mile yet, but then you ended up doing it. Why did you end up running 100 miles?
I think I knew I was going to do a 100 miler. It was like, but I wouldn't tell myself I was going to do one. You know what I mean? It just seemed so. So why did I do 100 mile? I don't know. Why
did you decide? When did you decide you were going to do it?
I decided after I completed a 50. Okay. And I went ahead and registered for Rocky Raccoon 100. I was like, all right, I'm going to give it a shot. See what happens.
What year was that?
It would have been if that Rocky Raccoon 50 was in 2009, then this would have been 2010.
So Teton 2009. So 2010. And you obviously didn't finish.
No, I went 60 miles.
Okay.
Yeah.
What happened?
I was sad and pathetic and didn't finish. I was also behind the cutoff. So yeah, that made it more difficult, but you know, I was sad and pathetic and didn't finish. So,
and in between there, it looks like you did some 50 Ks. You did Umstead 50 mile. You went to 3 days at the fair, which is something I got to do someday.
Back up. Umstead 50 miler is also a 100 mile DNF. Both of those times I did so Umstead will give you a 50 mile finish if you go that far.
An official finish.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's what that is. Some people run Umstead, will register for the Umstead 50 mile.
Yeah.
And they will do that. But I registered for the Umstead 100 mile and twice and dropped twice after reaching 50 miles. That's why you see two 50 mile finishes there.
What's the, can you win?
Maybe.
So
yeah, I think so.
Like Patera signs up, and he's ahead of the
and he runs the first 50 in 5:30, and then
can he drop and win?
I think so.
Okay,
I think so. I can't, but you would have to talk to.
But that's an option they give you.
You definitely will get a 50 mile finish. I don't know if you could get. I mean, it's not like Umstead gives you a prize.
Yeah.
You have a belt buckle that says champion for a 100 mile finish. But I don't even know what the 50 mile winner gets. Like maybe they get something. I don't know. So
you were going for 100 in that event.
And both of those Umstead 50s that are there, I was going for 100.
Okay. And what's 3 days at the fair like?
So 3 days at the fair is at the New Jersey State Fairgrounds in Sussex County. So it's about an hour from my house in Mahwah. And it is basically a fixed time race where you have a lot of regulars that go to that race year after year. And it's a 1 mile asphalt loop. Exactly 1 mile. And it's actually a really good race because all fixed time races I think are awesome because the logistics are really easy. But in this case, it's nice because along with the logistics are easy, you have a full kitchen that you have access to. You have a walk-in fridge that you have access to, a freezer you have access to, full bathrooms and showers, like clean bathrooms and showers that you have access to. And all this is right on the course. You can camp right on the course. You can pull an RV right on the course. And and the race directors are, you know, New Jersey Trail Series, Rick and Jen McNulty. They're, you know, they're chill people. They're really cool. You know, you always have a beer with them anytime you want. You know, that kind of vibe. Mm-hmm. So
how many participants? Big, small?
Medium size.
Okay.
Medium size. I think that it, you know, it's gotten pretty close. I don't think it's ever actually filled up, but it's gotten close to it. I know that, let me think, you know, maybe there's, in a 72 hour race, there might be 80 people, you know, combined, 80 to 90 people. And then you have a 24 hour, a 48 hour, 6 hour and 12 hour. And now this year, 144 hour. So,
is it 3 days? That's more than 3 days.
That's more than 3 days. Yeah.
They have to change the name.
They have to change the name.
So do you do that every year, no matter what?
I have done the 3 days at the fair every year, no matter what. It was like a thing that I did every single year. I'm sure I'll probably do it again next year. I'm not going to do the 6 day again. I just thought that was something I only wanted to do once.
Yeah.
Question is, will I do 3 days also, you know, or will I do like 2 days or even a 24? I'm not, you know, I'm not sure that I should do, you know, I want to do 72 hours again.
It sounds kind of like our, like the St. Pat's 24 hour race. I kind of go to every year.
I definitely will be there if I'm in town anyway.
Yeah.
Because
you were in South Bend.
Last week. I'm talking about 3 days at the fair.
Oh, okay. Yeah. No, I was saying the St. Pat's 24 hour.
You said you
were going to be there.
Oh, no.
No, that's in South Bend.
Oh, that's cool. I was just there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's 1 hour ahead of you.
And every year I forget that.
Oh, you know what? Man, it didn't even occur to me.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, I'll be there at 3, and then I get here at 2.
So. All right, so 3 days at the fair, you will go to so
three,
the year.
3 days at the fair, great race. Umstead, I'll also go at every year.
Get in every year, or is it hard to get in?
So they have the first come, first serve on the website thing, and I get in every year because I think that has an advantage to that. If you're good with computers, you have an advantage in that type of thing. For most people, it's effectively a lottery, but people who know their way around a computer can get in.
Okay.
You have an advantage. So I get in because I have an advantage.
So when did you get to 100 for the first time?
Umstead 2012. Well, all right. So let me back up. Across the years, I guess it would have been 2010 to 2011, I ran 106 miles. That was at Nardini Manor, and that was my first time doing 100 miles.
Okay. Yep, 72 hours.
Yeah, and I did that, and I got to 100 miles in like 60 hours. I was 325 pounds at the time.
Was it consecutive, or did you like sleep through the night?
I definitely slept at night. Actually, the first night that year was a gnarly, gnarly storm. I mean, crazy. And anyone who's there is like, wow, that was crazy. But yeah. And it took me 60 hours to get to 100 miles, you know, sleeping, doing what I can, going out and singing Billy Joel songs with Ray Kay.
You know? They give you a 100 mile buckle when you finish the 100
miles? Yes, they did.
Okay.
Yeah, they did.
So if someone's listening and let's say that not necessarily that they're overweight like us, but let's say that they're just slow or, you know, scared or inexperienced. Do you recommend that as a route to getting your first 100 miler where there's just, you're not thinking about the cutoff, you're not thinking about anything, you have 72 hours.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely. 72 hours is so much time to get 100 that you would have to be trying not to get to 100 to not get to 100.
You could literally walk slowly.
Oh, yeah. You could totally stroll it. Now, here's the thing. You've got to be a little bit careful because if you're 36 hours into it and you've not gotten to 50 miles yet, you were probably going to have a problem in the second 36 hours.
You're not going to play catch up.
I mean, you could. 36 hours for 50 miles, you know, you could totally do that. But, so, you know, you're still in a race. You know, you got to stay out on the course. But, yeah, I think that, and I have recommended that to a lot of people, because it's a totally different feel from a 100-mile race, like a traditional 100-mile race. In a traditional 100-mile race, you can't sleep. You can sleep, but you're not going to sleep all night long.
No.
And so your times in a fixed time race are very rarely as fast as your 100-mile split. Let me start. Your 100-mile split in a fixed time race is very rarely going to be faster than your 100-mile race times, just because it just feels different. You tend to move a lot more and a lot faster in a 100-mile race. I know that I have never come close to my 100-mile times in a fixed time race.
What's your 100-mile PR?
23:35.
Okay, sub 24.
Yeah, that was interesting.
Where was that?
Umstead.
Okay.
Yeah, 23:38 maybe, something like that. So, but I've never come close to a 24 hours and 100 mile split in a fixed time race. So it's just a totally different feel. Now, on the other hand, I know some people. I see people do it. I see people, you know, do their 100 miles, you know, 100 miles in a fixed time race pretty fast. So maybe it's just me, but I think generally, like, it's a generalization. People do. It's just a different feel.
Well, for me, it's also that they're usually a shorter loop. And that means there's more time at the start finish. And if you get more, then I tend to get more aid. And then I tend to socialize more.
Yeah.
And so, like, I don't feel the pressure of, you know, I think there's all no that pressure. There's no finish line.
And all that contributes.
Yeah.
All that contributes. Yeah. Yeah. There's no finish line. You're just going by your own aid every mile. You know, if you have a family there, they're hanging out every mile. If you have a car there, you're going into your trunk for something every mile. You're going to the aid station every mile. It's like, what, you know, there's always, and, you know, so, which actually what we're speaking to is having aid stations far apart.
Yeah.
You know, versus every mile.
Well, and I, when I do timed events, I don't seem to care. Like, I've never gone into the timed event saying, I'm going to make sure I get X number of miles in.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I'm sure people do, but just I don't.
Well, you usually start out that way, and then you throw that away.
You start negotiating with yourself.
You start negotiating. Yeah,
maybe exactly. Not 150. Maybe I'll only do 100.
Yeah, I think that's more accurate.
Well, you know, here we also have our Pottawatomie Trail Races, McNaughton.
Yes.
Is a 52-hour cutoff for the 150-mile race.
Okay.
And if you start with the 150-milers, you have 52 hours to do the 100.
That's good. But that's also kind of a... the course on that's kind of...
it's got some big fucking hills, and it's got some
mud.
River crossings.
Yeah, and there's mud too, right?
Yeah, there's mud.
Yeah.
I mean, there can be a lot of mud.
Yeah.
But it's another place where a lot of people around here say, I'm going to go get my first 100 there, because I'll start at noon, and I'll have, you know, 52 hours, and, you know,
mm-hmm.
I'll get it done.
Yeah, yeah. So I think that the only thing I would say is that, you know, the best... If you're going to do your first 100... You know, keep it as simple as possible, not complicating it with mud.
Yeah.
You know, and
more
roots
things
and
can go wrong, for sure.
You know, there's a lot, you know, just, in, yeah, exactly. There's a larger footprint for things to go wrong. Yeah. But, you know, I mean, the first 100 runner, I mean, 72, I mean, you know, a 72-hour race is an ideal place to get to 100 miles for the first time. But I never considered myself... I had the belt buckle. I wore the belt buckle. But I always knew. I wasn't a 100-miler until I actually finished a 100-mile race.
And that's Umstead 2012?
Yes.
And that you finished 28:39.
Correct.
And what was that like in comparison? Is that you giving it your all?
That is definitely me death marching the last 25. My last... 12 and a half. The Umstead has 8 12 and a half mile loops. My last 12 and a half mile split was, I think, like 4:30 or 4:45 for 12 and a half miles. Yeah. So it was hard. Yeah. I think it might have been a race where I finally met Julie Eisters.
That could be. Yeah. She's an Umstead.
She goes Umstead. It might have been 2013 when I met her, or 2014, but I think it was 2012.
And was that?
In fact, I know it was 2012.
I mean, so across the years before that, you ran 150 miles.
Yes.
But was that like when you...
And at 3 days at the fair, in a 48-hour race, I did 100 miles. I've done 100 miles a few times by then, but I still didn't consider myself a 100-miler.
But that was the moment.
That was the moment I actually, you know, when you could finally do a 100-mile race in 30 hours, like a race where the finish line is 100 miles. That's, you know, that's what I considered. Because I had tried and I failed. I'd gone 100 miles in fixed time races, 48 and 72 hours, I guess 4 times, but maybe 3 times. But I still had never, you know, there's no risk of failure in those races, you know? And where there is a risk of failure in the 100-mile races, I've DNF'd them. That's where you see the 2 Umstead 50s. That's where you see Rocky Raccoon going down, and that's where you see, you know.
So do you feel like you failed when you get that Umstead 50-mile finish?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, like, one of the things they do at McNaughton is if you, like, I went for the 150, and if you only make it to, like, 100, they give you the 100 buckle.
Yeah.
Or if you go for the 200 and you only make it to 150, they give you the 150 buckle.
Do you feel like you fail if you do that?
The first year... I went for the 150. I fell apart at like 80, and I found a way to walk it into 100, and I took the DNF buckle, and I felt like, you know, well, I ran 100 miles, you know, it took me 34 hours, but I ran 100 miles, you know, it still counts for something, and, you know, I didn't feel like a total failure or anything like that. My first DNF, I felt like a real failure, but, so that one, it felt okay, but now, like, this last year, I signed up for the 150, and I made it 110. Mm-hmm. I didn't even take the buckle. Like I didn't have any interest, you know.
Because you feel like you know more. You really should be able to do that.
Yeah.
You know, it's like what am I, you know what I mean? Yeah. I'll tell you, if I went to Umstead and only took a 50, it would be like, what the fuck is wrong with you? You know,
Do you have that dialogue with yourself? When was the last time you failed at something?
So Ancient Oaks 100 in 2016, okay. I didn't finish that. I made the decision to stop, even though I knew I could have finished. That was more because my family...
I'm going to push back on this for a second. Okay. What mile were you at?
I was just over 50.
Okay. So what makes you think that you definitely could have finished?
Well, one, I finished the race before.
Right. But, I mean, you don't know what could have went wrong.
I know. Okay, right. I know. Here's the reason I dropped, because it was taking me longer than I thought it would take. And I was still well within the cutoffs, and I still would have. And I was hanging with my friend who did finish, who always finishes. And I had things to do the next day that I needed to be back for. So my family was there, so I wanted to go back and be with them instead of staying on that course till the next afternoon, which is what it would have been.
So let's say you were in a position where it was very likely you were going to finish.
Yes.
Because sometimes I hear people say that, like, they dropped at 62.
I very likely would have finished had I stayed out there.
Barring something going wrong. Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, it's like, I've done, I don't know how many hundreds I've done now, maybe 8, 10, something like that.
But that doesn't sound I'm a failure situation.
No.
As much as a decision.
That was a decision. Was that a failure? Well, it was a failure in that I didn't set out to, didn't.
Do what you set out.
Yeah, exactly. You know. And I remember Mike Melton, who's a race director, says, you know, if it was anyone else, but, you know, you know what you're doing here. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He had this, you know, when I went to drop, it was kind of a decision to spend the weekend with the family instead of being on that race. When I thought I was going to finish that race in the morning at 7 or 8 the next morning, I have the whole next day to spend with the family. We're going to go to Kennedy Space Center. We're going to see a rocket launch. We're going to do all these things, right? And then it got hot. We were still out there. We were all within the cutoffs. But now, clearly, we're not finishing at 8 a.m. We're finishing after 12.
Yeah.
And now, like, it's coming into my family time. I think that race has a 32-hour cutoff and a 7 a.m. start, so I could have been there until as late as 3 in the afternoon. and I couldn't, you know, I wasn't going to do that. You know, that was a decision.
But that's a different kind of failure.
That's a different kind of failure. It's a failure, for sure. But, you know, I mean, look, it's you know, I'm not going to make excuses for DNF in 100. You know, I mean, I went out to do it. I didn't do it.
But it's not like when I was at Pottawatomie and we got to the point where we realized that my feet were not going to be able to carry me anymore. And I had no meaningful hope of finishing. You know, that feeling of I failed, you know, that's very different than, for example, my Kettle Moraine, where I was just like, I'm miserable. I'm not having any fun. Fuck this. This is, you know.
Well, that's different.
Yeah.
That is a failure, right? All right. We'll talk about our DNF conversation, right?
Yeah.
Did you coin the term DNF blowjob?
I did.
Oh, good.
I did.
I love that term. And I think that that's totally accurate, right? I think that that's like, I think that like, so when someone doesn't finish a 100 miler, it's not necessarily helpful to berate them.
Yes.
And I, you know, I have been berated for DNFing races.
Who berated you?
I'm not going to go. I don't want to call anyone out.
Friend or enemy?
Friend.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. Not an enemy.
Well, I mean, it's got to be a good friend that does that.
Yes. Yes, for sure. For sure. But I don't want to call him out because I don't want to make him look bad because they're a friend, you know? But I have been berated for it and I felt shitty and whatever, right? When someone says, but Steve, you went 70 miles, or you went 62 and a half miles. That's so amazing. It's like, no.
You want to punch him in the dick.
It doesn't... I know they mean well, they do mean well. And I appreciate the effort, but it's not helpful.
And those aren't your friends.
They're usually, they're my friends, but they tend not to be ultra-runner friends.
I mean, like, there's a guy at the Kettle Moraine, my Kettle Moraine example. We'll call him Jake, because that was his name.
Okay.
And Jake, he sent me a message and said, what the fuck?
You know?
You finished the fucking Arrowhead, you know, and the Tuscobia and the Slam that nobody else finishes, and you can't get past mile 55 at the Kettle Moraine. What the fuck is wrong with you? You know, get back out there and run, you know, like.
Well, when you're in the race, that kind of tough love is can be helpful depending on who's getting it.
This was a message after I had already dropped. So
yeah, after you had already dropped, that's a different story. You know, yeah. I mean, after someone's dropped, where you empathize with the person. Yeah, I've been there.
Yeah.
It sucks. You know, but
I think the DNF blowjob has.
But that's different from a DNF blowjob.
Yeah.
DNF blowjob is, man, you did 60. That's amazing what you were able to accomplish. No.
Right,
no.
And that's when you fail, and then I think there are probably people that think about this. Well, you know what else? When I tell people that I didn't make it, everyone's just going to talk about how awesome I am anyway, you know?
Yeah.
And then you get this, like, you get this validation of, like, 400 people. Here's another one. Did nothing fatal. Okay, how long you been running ultras?
Since 2008.
How many ultras have you done, roughly?
50?
Okay. And how many people do you know that have done ultras?
Hundreds.
Okay. And from the hundreds of people that you've known over the tens of years that you've been running, has anyone died?
No.
Okay.
Well, so, I mean, while running ultra?
Yes. So did nothing fatal? What the fuck does that mean? Does anybody really think that they're going to die? You're 3 days at the fair. You're in a goddamn concrete loop. You're going to die.
Yeah, right. Going?
That's never going to happen, right?
Yeah. This past weekend at the Beast of Burden 100 miler, right? I was pacing my friend, Melissa Huggins, she's an ultra runner.
She didn't give us permission to use her name, but we can, right?
No.
Okay.
And yes. it's on public and Facebook that I paced her, so it's fine.
All right.
And
Sorry, Melissa.
She's awesome. She's really cool.
Can we call her?
Can we call her?
Yeah. Will she take the call?
Maybe. Yeah, sure. I don't have my phone number on me. Oh, yes, I do. Here it is.
Is it iPhone?
No. But I'll give you the number. And I'll text her ahead of the...
One sec. Yeah, let's just call her. Fuck it. Let's do this shit live.
She's in a bar. She's in a bar. Melissa.
All right. Is she drunk?
I don't know.
That's what I'm saying.
Hello?
Hey.
Hi, is this Melissa?
This is Melissa.
Hi, Melissa. This is Scott Coomer, and I'm here with Steve Tersey. We're live on the 10 Junk Miles podcast, and we just wanted to ask you about his pacing abilities.
About what? His pace? Hold on one second. How do I open this door? I'm having... All right, we're good. Sorry. What were you asking?
Steve paced you. How did he do?
He is a...
You could tell the truth.
I have a love-hate relationship with Steve right now. Because when I gave him a goal, he decided that he was going to make me hit that goal come hell or high water. So when I was really dying and I said, I feel like crap and I really want to drop, and he goes, that's nice. And then he picks up the pace and starts walking again.
What was the goal?
So my first goal was a sub 2400. We were looking at the time for coming into 50 miles under 11 hours, and it was looking really good, and he just kind of kept pushing me despite my rebuttal, and we made it in 11:04 for the 50. So he got me there. He did his job. He's definitely awesome. In the second 50, when I wanted to drop 1,000 times, he basically never thought twice about letting me drop, and he just was kind of like, yeah, that's stupid. Keep going.
Hey, Melissa, so, it's awesome. Melissa, it's okay to tell the truth.
It's okay to what?
It's okay to tell the truth. How do you really feel?
I hate Steve.
So did you?
I wanted to lay down and sleep, and he wouldn't let me. And I wanted to put my feet up, and he only gave me like 5 minutes at a time. And I wanted to cry, and he just ignored me.
So did you finish?
I did. I finished in 27:44.
Is it
which was a lot slower than I wanted.
Well, and how many hundreds have you run?
I think this is my seventh.
Okay. And
so I've done a lot of multi-days. Me and Steve run 3 days at the fair every year together. We ran 6 days this year. So I knew that he is a great person to have on my side. Definitely an awesome person to, you know, keep along for the ride. And he knows what he's doing.
And do you feel good now? How's your recovery going?
It's awesome. I have been a streaker now for 43 days. I didn't think that it was going to happen today. And I got up this morning and I ran my 1 mile for my streak in 10 minutes and 19 seconds. So
nice. And now, did Steve get a Pacer gift?
So he's going to. Because him and his wife drove me, I really couldn't exactly bring it with me. But his car happens to be at my house, so he can close his ears. And as long as he's not listening, I'm going to get him listen.
Hold on. He took off his headphones. Go ahead.
Okay. He is getting a growler of Victory Brewing beer because it's right down the street from my house. He loves it. So I'm going to get him one of their really awesome growlers and fill it up with one of their best beers and send it on the way with him. So
that's awesome.
That's his gift. He just couldn't take it with him. So.
All right. Put your earmuffs back on. It was like a scene from the old school. Earmuffs.
You know what?
Earmuffs.
You know what? I was so happy to get that tank of gas. It got me to Buffalo. She bought me a tank of gas. I was like, that's cool. I'll pace you.
Nice. Do you listen to the 10 Junk Miles podcast?
Do I listen to what?
The 10 Junk Miles podcast.
So I actually had it until we were driving up to Buffalo.
Listen to a couple episodes. No,
I think the second one I was listening to, I really liked. But I told him I'm going to have to. Sorry, I'm in New York City. There's lots going on. When we were listening, I said I definitely think I'm going to have to start listening to some of these ultra long run and in the long run. I like it.
Awesome. Well,
except he speeds you up so that he can listen to more. So it's like. You'll have to have them play that because unless you have ADHD, you can't follow.
Yeah, I listen to podcasts at double speed.
So do I.
Yeah.
Well, now you're going to be on it, so I'll definitely.
Why
not? This is you're on it right now.
Oh.
This is the podcast. Oh. You're on the podcast.
What? Why can't Steve go pick up your phone when somebody calls? I'm like, I'm in a bar right now.
That's even better.
Yeah, we did a whole interview of a girl once drunk at a Waffle House. So it's fine. It's all good. Don't worry about it.
I finished my 100 and jumped on a plane and flew into New York and went to a Fish concert and I just haven't left New York yet. So
that is amazing.
Her plane flight was at 4 o'clock, which 4 o'clock is the 100 mile cutoff. So she couldn't just finish it. She had to finish at least 2 hours in advance of the cutoff.
And then, did you fly stinky on the plane?
So I kind of like Mexican showered it. Like I real quick jumped in the shower.
Whoa! We got Mexican people to listen to the podcast.
That's like a common term.
Oh my God.
I'm from Philadelphia, and it means nothing. It's right. Still in a bucket of water on your head.
That's not the things of the...
That's not politically correct.
She's not expressing the views
to
of the
everybody,
podcast.
I am not... I love everybody.
You must want to build a wall. Tell the truth. You want the wall, don't you? You want me on the wall.
No, actually,
you need me on the wall.
The wall.
All right.
I don't.
I'm joking.
But I cleaned off real quick. I jumped on a plane, and I ended up in New York, and then I took a real shower, and that was lovely. And then I was up until 6 o'clock this morning, so I pulled a 48-hour.
Oh, my God.
It was pretty, yeah. And then I got up at noon, and I started again.
This is the first time I've talked to her since I dropped her off at the airport.
Oh, nice.
So, yeah. So.
Well, do us a favor. Have a drink for us, and we'll make sure we tag you when we put up this podcast, because you're going to be going out to dozens of people who listen.
Well, you know, if anybody needs a little of, I'm the person who I have fun when I run. That's it. So.
Yeah. She's like totally.
That's all we're
hanging
looking
out,
for.
Hanging out and having a good time.
You're our kind of people.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm just a get it done kind of gal. So.
Well, congratulations to you once again. And I won't tell Steve about his gift.
Awesome. Thank you.
Have a great night.
It.
Thanks for taking our call.
You as well.
Bye.
Bye, Steve. Have fun.
Bye, Melissa. Have fun.
All right, who's next? We call your mom? Who we call? I like it when people do that on podcasts.
Yeah.
There should be more of that.
I know. Isn't that fun?
I like the free flow of information, too.
Yeah, seriously. Who cares, right?
Like, you know, like I listen to these other podcasts that are always like an hour. And whenever I see a podcast that's an hour or less, I think that's not going to be good. And when I see one that's like 2 or 4 hours long, I always think that's going to be really good.
It's going to be really, yeah. Well, yeah. It's not always, yeah. Okay. Yes,
what other podcasts do you listen to?
Let's see. I listen to a lot. I listen to like all the ones that everyone listens to.
I listen to a ton, and I listen to them on double speed too.
Yeah.
People think I'm crazy.
No. Yeah. When I put them on, people are like, how do you do that? You know, I listen to all the same ones that everyone else.
Just say the same one.
I listen whenever you ask
name
someone.
Them. Name
and whenever, okay. So like This American Life, Real Lab, Free Economics, all those things.
I call those procasts.
Yeah, exactly. 538 Politics, Planet Money, Criminal.
What's 538 Politics?
So, you know, 538.com,
like a betting thing?
No, I don't think so. They're basically data scientists and statisticians who analyze polls and tell you what they mean. So you might go onto your favorite cable news channel and say, so-and-so, Quinnipiac poll says so-and-so or whatever, and then there's a report on that. Well, 538 Politics actually goes into the polling methodology, and they talk about how
Is it nonpartisan?
It is nonpartisan. I'm sure that people will accuse it of having a partisan bent, but to me it seems nonpartisan.
And which way do you lean?
I am libertarian like you.
Okay.
I would call myself a never Trump conservative.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, and it doesn't offend you, this podcast?
This podcast?
The 5-8.
No. Okay. I don't get offended by, not 538.
Okay. What else?
Criminal, on the media, worldly, let's see, Reply All, Revisionist History. The Weeds, which is a liberal podcast. I listen to a lot of liberal podcasts because that's where I get my Never Trump stuff, you know. So I've picked up a couple of like the liberal ones lately. No Dumb Questions, which is Destin Sandlin, who is of a YouTube channel, Smarter Every Day. And then this other guy I never heard of. He's a pastor in a church in Wyoming.
Huh.
And he has a YouTube channel, and they got together and they do a podcast. There's another one that I listen to called Hello Internet, which is CGP Gray, who is a YouTuber. Basically, I follow these YouTube channels where people, explain our YouTube channels. There's like math and science YouTube channels or just random topics. So, and I watch those things on YouTube, and the hosts of these YouTube channels have gotten together making these two podcasts. Hello Internet, which is a guy named Brady Heron who does he does periodic videos, so chemistry videos, and he does number files, so math videos. And then CGP Gray, who does random informational videos, and they get together and they talk. So I have a couple of podcasts like that. I'm a Kevin Smith fan, so I listen to some Kevin Smith stuff.
I love him.
There's 10 Drunk Miles, Benjamin Walker's Theory of Everything, Exponent, which is technical analysis, Ben Thompson, Common Sense with Dan Carlin, and also Hardcore History, whenever they post anything. Serial, I listen to S-Town. There's DFL Ultra Running.
Yeah, that's
sick. Yeah.
I thought
Elevation Trail. What happened to those guys?
Yeah, I thought for a while DFL was going to come back because Scott was going to do it.
You mean Mike Saporito?
No, Scott Baver.
Oh, Scott Baver was going
to
do it.
He said something. He messaged me, and I said, anything you need to help? And
yeah, seriously. I would totally jump out on that, too.
Yeah.
I subscribed to Vinny Tortorich mostly because Tony Portera is a fan of him, and also when you had him on The Long Run, I finally subscribed to him. So I listen. To be honest, I delete most of those episodes, but I listen.
There's too many.
The 5 a week, I get backed up.
Yeah.
And I can't listen to them all. He's not wrong. He just rubs me the wrong way.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
He's like that angry uncle you had.
You know, he would never say this, but it's how he acts.
Yeah.
You know, he definitely acts like his is the only way to lose weight.
Yeah. That is an issue.
Yeah. And he would never say that.
Yeah.
But, you know, like what he says and how he behaves are two different, you know, so I don't think he's wrong. But I also don't think that I think veganism is totally fine. If you want to do that, be a vegan, you know, but you can even lose weight that way. But you know,
I'll take it a step further.
Yeah.
I think veganism is probably a better diet. I think other than, and I don't know the science of the macro micronutrient and the B12 or whatever the other thing that's, you know, people criticize it about. But mm-hmm. like when I talk about diet, nutrition, and I always say, and don't take my advice because look at me, yeah. but you know, obviously I say eat real food is the best priority.
Yeah.
Then after that, I say vegetables and fruits are better mm-hmm. than everything else.
Mm-hmm.
And then I usually say, you know, try to exercise and try not to eat too much. And then the last one is stay away from refined carbohydrates and refined sugars, you know?
Yes.
Those are like the four things that I think that very few people could argue with, although a lot of people argue with number four.
Yes.
But I mean, objectively, eat more plants?
Yeah.
Who's fighting that?
I know.
I'm not fighting that.
I know, right? It's like...
And I'm not saying... I mean, and I think that, you know, I think I could fix the whole thing. It's like the Middle East. Like, I could fix the whole diet crisis right here, right now, if we just said... Plant-based doesn't mean only plants. If we just accepted that premise,
yeah.
and then all the vegan and the vegetarians would say, plant-based is good. Be a plant-based guy that eats chicken once in a while. That's better than alienating everybody by saying plant-based means you can't ever eat any meat.
Yeah, know? Yeah.
Because I think it's a no-brainer. Like a salad versus a cheeseburger? I mean...
Seriously, yeah. seriously. Well, they say that like the plant-based diet is sometimes synonymous with the... what is called a Mediterranean diet.
Yeah.
Which, you know, clearly has some less, but a small amount of meat and yeah. a small amount of fish. Maybe more fish than meat, but lots of, but they don't shy away. But the thing about that distinguishes the Mediterranean diet is that there's no garbage.
Yeah.
You know, they'll eat beef.
Get rid of the garbage.
And they don't eat too much, you yeah. know, so.
And but, you know what it's like? It's like Christianity. I mean, do I wish that I believed it? Do I wish that, you know, like I had the lightning strike me and I, you know, had that.
It would be a lot easier if it worked that way, right?
And I don't look down on those people. I don't think they're stupid. I envy them. Just like I envy the vegetarians and the vegans. I wish I had that kind of discipline. I wish I could, you know, just get by on that. But I can't. Let's go back. Elevation Trail. I had a love-hate relationship with that.
Really?
Like, I thought those guys talked down to us. I thought
he did.
They were
the one guy in particular did.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Oh, who's the other guy? It was Gary David.
And I don't remember.
Tim Long.
Okay.
And I was friends in person with both of them.
Okay.
I've like gone out to.
Oh yeah, one of them is like from this area, right?
No, neither of them.
Minnesota.
They're both from Michigan. But I went out for dinner once with Gary David. He was in town. We spent a whole night talking and had a great time. And Tim Long, I've hung out with in Colorado. I hung out with a woman for a whole Leadville.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was very weird. It was like schizophrenic almost because they're making a podcast to attract people that are into the culture of ultra running and then bashing the culture of ultra running at the same time. It was kind of strange.
You know,
but they had interesting shows.
You know what, man? No, you know, here's the thing, man. I mean, if I said I'd never bashed the culture of ultra running on a run with someone, I would be lying. You know what I mean? It's just there's some things about it that just rub me the wrong way. You know,
give me like top three.
Oh boy,
let's have that discussion.
I am not a fan of like worshiping the front runners, and I know that's the wrong word to use, but I'm going to use it anyway.
Okay,
like the focus on the front runners, because I mean, if I wanted to focus on celebrities, I'd be following Michael Jordan. You know,
Jordan's not a celebrity anymore, really. But okay, I call that the elitification.
The elitification. Yeah. Okay, got it. Likewise, I mean. I enter the Western States Lottery every year, okay? That is a disclaimer. But I don't like the emphasis on half a dozen key races to the discredit of, you know, 100 other wonderful races that are out there.
If you listen to any other running podcasts...
Yeah, I know.
Like, if you listen to Trail Runner Nation or Ultra Runner Podcast or... Well, not as much Talk Ultra. They don't really do that much. There's like 9 special Western States ramp up interview preview post, you know.
Yeah, yeah. I just went through and I just last night I went through my Ultra Runner podcast feed and deleted maybe 9 or 10 episodes that seemed to be about Western States
because I like that show. I learned.
I do too. I like that. I like the show a lot. I can't. I mean, I like that show a lot because I've unsubscribed from a lot of podcasts because I get backed up. But I still keep Ultra Runner podcast. I still keep 10 Drunk Miles.
Trail Runner Nation.
I've never actually subscribed to Trail Runner Nation.
Really?
Yeah. I had subscribed to Talk Ultra for a while, whatever. So, you know, it's just I can't have, you know, I just have to, like...
We just had a short dog emergency.
Dog emergency.
West Coast elitification.
I don't... Yeah, West Coast elitification, I don't know. I mean, it's, listen, it's not... I don't mind that I'm... You know, by criticizing that, I'm projecting my own preferences on people, which is what we already talked about. Instead of talking about how bad they are, the reason I mentioned Melissa before is because Melissa had gone through like some of the worst. We were talking about this last weekend, yesterday. Melissa had gone through some of the worst like stomach nausea issues I had ever seen in a race. I would have dropped. And she had that issue where her calories had been depleted, right? So she had to eat, right? But she couldn't eat because everything that she had would eat would make her nauseous.
It's a starvation mode.
And she started spiraling. And it persisted. It never went away. And every time we came to an aid station, I thought she was going to drop. And she didn't. She kept getting back up, and she kept going back out there. It was one of the most remarkable displays of tenacity I had seen.
Just a complete refusal to give up.
Well, yeah, exactly. She talked constantly about giving up. And like she said, I had never entertained those conversations. Like, oh, look, shooting stars. And there were shooting stars. But you know, that's the only thing I could do as a pacer. I'm not going to go in there and try to convince her to stay. I'm just going to pretend that she's going to stay.
When you pace somebody, do you take it personally? Are you going to make sure that they finish? Does it bug you?
No. It's their battle. I'm there to help in any way I can.
Is there a point where you would have said, okay, yeah,
fine. No.
You can drop.
No.
Okay.
No. And if there was a point, he would have reached it this time. But at no point was I going to give her permission. She was looking for permission to drop from me. And I wasn't going to give it to her. Just because it's not my job to give her permission to drop, you know? And so there was one point, like the very last, mile 87.5, I was sure she was going to drop there, right? And she's talking for miles about how she's going to drop. And I was never entertaining it. And then at one point she said the one thing, and I was like, I'm going to leave my pack there and just carry a handheld because I'm not drinking anyway. I'm like, that's a good idea. I'm going to do the same thing. I think she was like, look, I think that was the opposite reaction that she said that she wanted because, you know, as soon as she gave me a hint that she was going to continue, I jumped right on that, you know, and when she was ready to walk out, it impressed the hell out of me. Anyway, why don't we have more conversations about that? You know what I mean? Why are we talking so much about how some guy I'd never heard of came in second place at Western States?
And what does he eat? And how does he train? And you know what? Yeah, I mean, what is he thinking? What is his strategy?
It's interesting, but who gives a shit?
Eventually, it's not interesting. Eventually, yeah. You're like, this is the 900th person I've listened to that's going to be way faster than me, and that I can't relate to in any way.
Yeah. You know? But man, more stories like, because every ultra has a dozen stories like that. I'm sure. Who hears them? No one hears them because people are too humble to talk about them.
Well,
right?
And more people, you know, like your story, you'll minimize it cause it's you, but I mean, you're an interesting and relatable person. There are a lot of people like you in ultra running, and arguably there are more people like you in ultra running than there are like Sage Kennedy in ultra running or Scott Jurek,
yeah.
You know, I mean, the everyman. It's kind of like how like Dean Karnazes has kind of made marathoning for the everyman, you know, but Carno's kind of, he's not the everyman, you know, he's good looking, he's fast, he's famous, he's rich, he's, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
But this is a sport for the everyman, you know?
It depends on the everyman being participating.
Yeah.
You know, some sports depend on everyman observing, right? This depends on everyman participating. Running, all running does. Triathlon does, because they don't get enough participants to fund the pros or the companies that support them, right? So it depends on everyman participating. And everyman participating, it turns out they have the best stories.
Yep.
They have the best conversations. They have the best lives. You know, I mean, it's so interesting. I hate to say like when I started, if it was more like that, because I really don't know if it was.
I say it all the time.
Yeah.
And I started, you started a little bit before me. Because, I mean, I started doing a lot of ultras 11, 12, you know.
Oh, okay. Got it.
So you've been around longer than I have.
And I like to say it, but I'm not sure it's true. Because there's always been like an emphasis on the front of the pack, like that, like Scott Jurek was still around. Lisa Smith Batchen was still like, I don't know if she was still winning races at the time, but she was definitely.
I'm going to say it because you know what I remember is my first 50 miler. I remember coming back from my first 50 miler to my running group, which was the New Leaf Ultra Runners at the time, and telling them that I finished. And no one asked me what my time was.
Yeah, and I thought, and you told that story before.
That's interesting.
Yeah, you
know?
Now it's not like that. Yeah, for sure.
We go to fat ass races and there's people like looking over each other's shoulders, seeing if they have more loops than the other person does, you know?
Yeah.
And there's a lot more bragging. There's a lot more comparing to each other. There's a lot more of that kind of stuff. I mean, to be honest with you, that's one of the things I really like about the winter ultras is because if you finish the Tuscobia 160, nobody gives a shit how long it took you. You know, you went 160 miles.
and at the finish line of every 100-mile race I've ever got run, there are people cheering. There's never a single person that looks disappointed in their time at the finish line of a 100-mile race.
Although, I worked that aid station at the Hennepin 100, and there were people, and some of them listen to this podcast, and don't be mad, that stopped at my aid station when I was at 60-something and were very upset because they weren't going to break 24 hours anymore. And I'm like, what are you talking about? The sun is up. You have 12 hours to finish the race.
But that's the kind of stuff that happens in the middle of a race. In the middle of a race, you have so much time to think about how you're not making your goals and how much you suck or whatever.
Yeah.
But at the finish line, you never feel that way.
Yeah.
You know, I think Melissa had goals for this race that she did not achieve, but what she did achieve by finishing was so much more impressive and so much more so much more to be proud of. She might have gone 24, and that would have been a remarkable accomplishment. But finishing despite having all those issues and having that tenacity, I think that is where the value is.
And it created the situation whereby she had to get to the airport on time and to the bar on time and to the fish concert on time.
Yeah,
all of those things are not impressive if she finished in sub 24 and took a 5-hour nap.
Yeah, I know, right? I know.
I'm just saying.
You're absolutely right.
What's your inner dialogue when you quit? Where do you get your permission to quit?
Well, I mean, aside from the one that we just talked about, Ancient Oaks, when was the last time I've quit something? Like, in fixed time races, I've kind of not been the...
Doesn't count, though.
Yeah. I mean, does
There's
it
no
count?
Pressure.
Doesn't it?
No.
Okay.
I did see, and just so I could be that asshole, there's a fixed time event in here where you had a result that didn't make any sense to me. What is this?
You're talking about the 72-hour race a few years ago where I got 103 miles?
No, I'm talking about Parsippany.
Parsippany.
12-hour.
Oh,
2014,
yes.
You ran 2 miles. Tell me that story. See, this is what this podcast is all about. That's the fucking story I want out of all these races.
That's going to be a much more boring story than you think, man.
All right, give it to us.
That was the weekend after the Beast of Burden 100, and that's a fat ass race. And I showed up to hang out and drink beer.
Oh,
and I walked a few laps. I probably ran a mile for the streak and then just walked me. And I apparently walked 3 more laps as a 1/2-mile loop. And I was just there to hang out.
Let's talk about streak.
All right. Let's talk about the streak.
How long have you been streaking?
2,414 days. And I looked it up because I knew you'd be asking.
How many years?
If I run today, it's 6.5 years, 6.5 years plus a few weeks.
How many miles a day?
Average?
At least.
Oh, at least one.
Okay.
Average 4.
Why?
Brute force consistency.
What's the virtue of that?
Consistency?
Yeah.
Being able to...
Well, your consistency is trumping something else then, you know? This is what I never understood.
Okay, what's the virtue of the consistency or the brute force?
A brute force consistency.
Well, there's two questions. The virtue of the brute force is that it's the only way that I could be consistent.
Okay.
The virtue of the consistency is what enables me to complete these events. So prior to the streak, I would have periods where I would run for, I would run 4 or 5 days a week for a month or two. And then I would not run one day and then I would not run the next day. And then a month goes by and I haven't run at all. If you go to Matt Mahoney's Million Mile Ultra site and you look up my results there, you'll see prior to, before when the streak started, there were a lot of months where I had a dozen miles in the month, you know, and probably some missing months too, because I had 0 miles that month. The month prior to my streak starting, I think I ran a total of 3 miles. I started the streak across the years. the year that I went 100 miles, that my first time going 100 miles was at, was that, that first day of that race was the first day of my running streak. And so every 100 miler I finished has been since I started the running streak. And I attribute 100, I attribute those accomplishments not to the streak. The streak is the second order, to the consistency. Because the problem in my training, the problem in my running was in the consistent training. If you go out, especially if you're a big guy, maybe skinny guys can do this, but if I go out and try to run, you can get away with running a marathon on no training. You can get away with running even a 50-miler on no training. But if you go out and you try to run hundreds and you've never done hundreds, or especially if you've never done hundreds, but if you like had not run in the whole month prior and you go out and run 100 miles, maybe you could do it. A fat guy can't do it. And even if you can do it, it's not going to be, you know, it's just.
Well, it turns into what that, I don't know if you've ever read that Edward Sander blog, that Century or Bust thing where he talks about anybody can run 100 miles. And here's, not the one that's been going around lately, but there's an older one, a friend of mine from Minnesota. And he's like, it's like a blog.
I haven't seen it.
It's written to the guy who's not ready, who feels like he's not ready for his 100.
Yeah.
And you know, one of the points he makes is that, he'll say anybody can run 100 miles. If you haven't trained, don't worry. You can mostly hike it and get away with it. The real problem is that you're going to really suffer. And if you're willing to really suffer, minimize time at aid stations and hike, you can probably finish.
Okay.
You
know? Yeah. I will say that's much easier said than done.
He's not a fat guy either. Just, you know, he's a pretty in shape guy.
It's easy to say that. And I'm sure someone has done it. I would love to hear that story because it would be so interesting. I do not want to experience that story. You know, the kind of 100 mile experiences I want to have are, you know, I mean, I'm not expecting easy hundreds, but you know, for the same reason why you wouldn't, I don't know, you wouldn't carry a 50-pound pack with you when you ran 100 unless you're trying to like, you know, unless you're trying to like raise money or something. I don't know. Right. You wouldn't do something intentionally to make your 100 harder. You might run 100 in harder conditions.
I'm always wearing a 50-pound pack. I just can't take it off.
Yeah, right? Seriously. It's the story of my life. But you might run 100 in extreme conditions. But even in those situations, you optimize everything you possibly can.
Yeah.
You optimize what you're going to wear. You optimize your nutrition or whatever. You know, whatever. Everything you know how to do, you're going to do to make it. You know, so why would you not want consistent training, right?
When will the streak end?
I don't know.
What's the most extreme you've had to go to get your mile in?
There's two stories. Okay. The one that most people think is more extreme is the day after I sprained my ankle in a boot camp class. I sprained my ankle doing something stupid. And I had to wrap it up really, really tight and hobble a mile, right? That was the second most difficult day. The first most difficult day was the day after Umstead 2012.
The day that you were your fastest 100 miler?
No, the day, my first 100 miler. Yeah. I remember finishing that 100 miler and I thought my streak was over because I couldn't walk. I literally could not walk. My wife had to go into Walgreens and buy me a cane. And it sounds like I'm being dramatic, but it's actually the truth. I was like, I need a stick.
Well, my wife's seen that. She's seen that.
Yeah, and it's shocked to hell of me because I finished the race and I laid down, and I was like really happy and really proud. And then I tried to get up, and my ankle. This is before I sprained my ankle, so I don't even know which one it was, but it would not hold my weight, and I immediately collapsed, and I didn't know what to do. And I was like, we had to fly home that afternoon. And so it was like, not right then, thankfully, but we had to fly home that afternoon. So I had to have I guess someone must have held me up. Do you remember? Did someone carry me to, you know, hold me? No one carried me, obviously, but like it's just somehow I got to the car and we went straight to Walgreens and she went inside and bought me a cane. And I walked with a cane for the next 24 hours. And then I went to a track, a high school track, and I put the cane down because the rules say no canes. At that point, I could just hold myself up, and I just, and that first loop of that first lap of that was 4.5 minutes. The last lap was 3 minutes or 3:30, whatever, but the first lap of that mile was 4.5 minutes. Which,
have you ever had to run like
running
at the end of the night, like right before you go to bed because you didn't get it in?
I once ran at 11 p.m. Coming out of New York. I ran on a dark track in Teaneck High School off of Route 4 coming out of the city. That sucked.
Have you ever run in an airport?
I ran at JFK Airport, not inside a terminal. I didn't run in the morning. We missed a plane. And the next flight wasn't going to be for 7 hours. We were flying to the West Coast, and it was going to land at 11 p.m. And I'm like, that's kind of a little close. So I went for a run on the, in front of the terminal, in front of like where people drop people off at JFK Airport, like from one terminal to the next one and back, like so along the side of the road where there really isn't much of a sidewalk where there is one, and half the time there wasn't a sidewalk at all.
I was thinking there's got to be a book or a blog somewhere of where to run from every airport in the world. Because it has to come up a lot that people want to get a run in.
Well, most people, if you're doing like a flight like that where you have, where you span multiple days, I have heard of people running inside airport terminals for sure. I don't know. I've never had to do that myself.
Yeah, but I'm not talking about streakers just. I'm talking about like just business people that just, I'm at the airport. Now's a good time for me to go get my run in. Where should I go?
Oh, yeah.
There has to be a place near most airports.
The problem is that there's the infrastructure. Normally you'd get a shower or something after that. That's true. What I mean?
What's your friend's name?
Melissa?
Melissa.
Yeah, unless you're Melissa. And Melissa
actually. She went Mexican shower.
Yeah, right. Man. Well, we are on a run here, right? A long run.
That's true. That's true.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. Who is your running mentor?
I don't have one anymore, but I used to be. That would have been Tony Portera years ago.
Have you ever run with him? Like gone for a run with him? Do you guys?
Yeah. Let me. I don't remember exactly how we met. I know that Lisa Smith Batchen introduced us. I don't remember actually the occasion we met because we were at the same races like 3 times. And long story short, we ended up, we did a lot of runs at Rockefeller State Park in Westchester and Sleepy Hollow. And I must have run, 500 miles or 1,000 miles with him there. We did another bunch of runs up Bear Mountain, and this is like him hanging with me, like a fat guy, a slow guy. He's capable of running much faster, but he was like totally willing to hang with me, right? And then we went to a couple races together. We went to Umstead a couple times. Back before I was finishing them, but we went there a couple of times, and then I was on his crew at Badwater, I guess in 2010 or 2011, something like that, which was the other example of someone just like
gutting it out.
Like I could not have done that. I would have dropped. That would have been a failure with a capital F, like what we were talking about before.
Is that a race that you want to do?
Badwater? No.
What's on your bucket list? What do you want to do?
I think I'd like to do and see, it's funny how that's evolved over the years, right? I'd like to do, I still would like to do like really scenic things. I'd like to do like the Wonderland Trail, for example. I wouldn't mind doing UTMB, and not because of like the craziness. I just wanted, it just looks like an amazing course. Hard Rock, I'd like to do. All three of those things, I think I would have. I don't think I would be able to do as a big guy, as a fat guy. I tried to do the Racing Steamboat Run Rabbit Run a few years ago, and I DNF'd that. That was my last like actual failure. I just missed a cutoff, but it was an actual failure. And I think that it's just like, when you're a big guy, it's hard to make those monster climbs up to 10,000 or 11,000 feet or whatever.
To climb up or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. It's different. It's different. Like I gotten pretty good at running flat hundreds at sea level. Races like Umstead, races like Ghost Train, races like, I don't know. But, and Umstead is relatively flat compared to what we're talking about.
Do you want to lose a bunch of weight and run races? I mean, is weight loss like something on your radar screen? It sounds like you've been roller coastering your whole life.
Yeah, it's just something that I've always wanted to do. For me, it feels like, man, it's like It feels like there's lost potential there. Not that I care, but I'm really curious what I could do if I was 200 pounds. You know, I mean, I ran a sub 2400 at 280 pounds. What could I possibly do if I was 180 pounds? Not that that's what I want, but I'm curious.
Someone's doing the math right now. It's two seconds per mile per pound.
Yeah, someone's doing that. I don't know. Well, 100 is like a totally different, you know, I could do the math too, but like 100 is like so many things can go, you know, it's like a lot, much different. I'm really curious, like what would happen. I ran a sub 24 minute 5K at 280 pounds.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I don't know, you know, and it's not about the time. I still am really proud of that time. You know what I mean? It's like, this is one of those situations of what I say and how I act are different.
Sure.
You know, like, yeah, the time doesn't matter so much, but goddamn, I'm wearing my silver buckle from Umstead right now. You know, I love that buckle, you know, and there's only a couple thousand people in the world that know what that buckle means, but man, you know,
but it's not the same to say that. I mean, the time doesn't matter in the broader sense of the word, but it does matter to you relative to you. You know, it's like one of the things that the SoCal Coyotes and their Bushido that always strings home with me. It's this: measure yourself against yourself and be generous. You know, it's not that you think that your buckle means that you're better than someone that tried and couldn't get the buckle. It's just, and it's an example of you doing your best and being your best relative to where you were at right then and there, you know, and you could be better maybe later on. But I mean, I guarantee you that if you lose 50 pounds and you go back to Umstead and you beat that time, it's not going to
be the same. You're right.
You know?
But you know, but if I lose 50 pounds, go to Umstead and run 720, that might be something. Yeah. You know, that's kind of like one, you know, maybe it's just a validation of it all. You know, I mean, like, does everyone have self-worth issues?
Everyone does.
Does everyone have social anxiety?
Sure.
You know, I mean, I don't know if I'm worse or, you know, than average on that or not. But, you know, the fact that I was able to go out and do that despite, like, you know, social anxiety and self-worth issues and whatever, you know, it's validating. You know what I mean? You know, a fact I can go and do this shit. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And the fact I can actually do well in these things. Maybe not at Hard Rock, but at least I could go to Umstead and knock out a sub 24. You know what I mean?
They just had the AC 100 this weekend, and I remember I DNF'd the AC, and at the pre-race meeting, they have that scale.
Uh-huh.
And so Hal Winton, who died this year, he says, you know, you don't have to do the scale. He's like, we don't really enforce the scale anymore, but, you know, if you want to, we'll put your weight in there for the, you know. And I looked at him and I said, is there any kind of record for the fattest guy ever to finish? He's like, no, we don't have any record of that. And I'm like, well, then there's no reason.
Yeah, right.
Because I wanted to have a crack at that.
Yeah. You know what? I think I'm the fattest known guy. You know, fastest known time. I'm the fattest known guy to go sub 24 and 100. That's something.
And what was your weight?
About 280.
Okay, so all the people listening, if you weighed more than 280 and you went sub 24
in a 100-mile race,
and I wanted to pass the scrutiny of marathoninvestigation.com guys.
Oh, yeah, that guy's going to kick my ass.
contact us, because we could make the claim on the podcast. We could put it on the graphic too: fattest guy to finish sub 24 hour 100.
But you're not the first one to do that. Eric Sherman did that too.
You put that on the graphic?
On the graphic. I'm sorry, no, but he did make a claim on a podcast.
No, but like on the promo.
No, there you go.
That could be. Then people will see that and they'll be like, "Fuck, I want to listen to this." You know, fattest guy to go.
I'll get some listeners.
Yeah. So those are your dream races.
But you know what, man? I don't think so. And that, and you know, I used to think that. I don't think about dream races much anymore. I just want to, like, I think about my friends more. You know, I was listening to, like, back up. I was getting caught up on the drive over here. On 10 Drunk Miles, you guys were talking a lot about races like Arrowhead and Tuscobia. Races, I'd heard of Arrowhead, but never Tuscobia. And I'm like, why didn't I? I'm not a hot weather runner. My friend,
come do the 80 with us.
Well, let me finish my thought. So that's the point I'm trying to make, is that, you know, my friends are hot weather runners. They've gone out and they've done. I have friends that have done Vol State. Melissa's registered for Vol State.
Aster's won Wall State.
Yeah, exactly. They're hot weather runners. I can't do hot weather. I would not even try to do Vol State because, you know, if it's above 80 degrees, I'm a mess.
Heat is your kryptonite.
Yeah, it really is. I can do cold. I don't know if I could do extreme cold. I don't have the equipment or experience necessary to do something like Arrowhead or Tascobia 160. But why hasn't it even been on my radar? And that's because my friends, the people that I run with every day, don't do those races. You know, it's just, it's not on the radar of my super.
Beast of Burden has a cold one too, doesn't it?
They do a winter version of that same race. I don't know if that's in the same category as Tuscola.
No, not at all. No. But I mean,
there's hundreds in the winter
cold race.
There's hundreds in the wintertime.
Yeah.
Right. But it's not. But the point I'm trying to make isn't that I want to do these races. The point that I'm trying to make is that what the biggest factor in what makes me want to do a race these days is, are my buddies doing it? Are my friends doing it? Are people that I know I can hang out with doing it? I went across the years and I hung out with people and I met a lot of people and it was really cool and it was like meeting people on the West Coast. But a lot of times I'll go to a West Coast race and I talk to like three people all day long. Yeah. And it's not because they're not, it's just, I just don't know them. And I'm not like the type of person that's going to walk up and say, hi.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's just not me. But, you know, like the same people I've seen at the reason I go to 3 days at the fair every year isn't because of the race. I mean, the race is great. The race is fine. It, you know, whatever. It's because of the people there. All my friends do that race. I want to do it too because I want to be with them.
Yeah.
So what decides what races I'm going to do? Or what's the factor? Is Fred Muirola going to be there?
Yeah.
Is Gary Ferguson going to be there? Is Bill Gentry going to be there? Is Melissa Huggins going to be there? You know, these are the questions that I ask, right? These are the friends that I hang out with every, you know, that I talk to.
Or they post on the internet, oh, I just signed up for 3 days. And you're like, yeah. Oh, I'll sign up for 3 days. You know, I mean, everyone signs up for it.
Yeah, exactly. So that's the kind of, you know. That's
the path to doing the same goddamn races every year.
Yeah, it's just, but you know, well, yeah, but I don't mind that, you know?
Yeah, but you said you want to go out and see some scenery and see some places.
I do. I want to see those pretty places. And I have friends that would do them with me. And one day, maybe I will go off and do a rim to rim to rim in cold weather. But, you know.
How do you feel about Texas in December?
Oh, I just heard that interview at going to the church thing. I just listened to that last night, you know.
So far, I'm the only
one. That was one of the ones that, you know what I'd rather do? Huh? I'd rather do the one in Spain.
What's that? Oh, the one he was talking about?
I don't know what. I know that John Morlock wrote about it in his book.
Yeah.
The last chapter of his book.
Yeah.
And actually Melissa was talking about doing it. I want to do that one. If I'm going to do a church, you know, I mean, the church thing in Texas, I'm sure, is great. I
didn't even know that guy. I thought maybe he's.
I never heard of him.
Religious kook or something, and you know, and he turned out to be this interesting guy.
Oh yeah,
you know?
Totally.
But that thing, he posted it, and I was just like, who the hell would ever want to do that? And then I just kept going back and looking at the website. I'm like, oh, these churches are kind of neat, you know.
I mean, it's a week though, right?
It's a week.
Yeah, if I'm going to take a week, spend a little extra money and do it in like a place like Spain. Like, if you're going to be a tourist, be a tourist. True. I go to Texas for work.
I can't go to Spain without my wife, all right? If I say, I'm going to take a week and go to Spain, she's coming with.
Well, that's exactly right. And she will go to the next thing and wait for me there while I go and while I walk with you.
My wife would object to that. She would be like, no, that, fuck that. If we're going to Spain, find a 50K and then let's have a vacation.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. What do you think, honey? Okay.
We went to Mexico and we did no running.
Oh, yeah.
Really nice. We did 4 or 5 days of no running.
But that's actually another thing is that, like, these destination races, I don't do them much anymore because, you know, time with the family is going to.
Give kids?
I have one kid.
Okay.
Yeah. He is actually in California right now.
How old?
He's 13.
Oh.
Yeah. So I do stuff with them. The reason I dropped out of Ancient Oaks was to hang with the family and go to Kennedy Space Center with them.
Yeah.
You know, it's the kind of, you know, I feel guilty if I go and if I have an opportunity to go run Western States, I'm going to take a few days and go run Western States. But otherwise, the vacation time with the family, I try to run local races. So it's just not as impactful. One of the nice things about 3 days at the fair is that we can, you know, they can come and they can hang out. My wife has become friends with a lot of people that go there. You know, like the other spouses or whatever. So she can hang out. She comes on the weekend. Joey comes and he does the race. He'll go do 40 miles at 13 years old.
Do you sleep in your own bed at the end of the night?
No, but I bring a tent and a cot and it's...
Well, like the day you go home from the race, you're not going back to your house and going to bed.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
I mean, at the end of the... on Sunday.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And so, yeah, it's close. And so most of the races I run, I mean, I did Ghost Train a couple years ago. And the way I did that was I woke up Saturday morning, drove from New Jersey to New Hampshire. It was like 4 hours. Ran the race, 100 miles, drove home Sunday afternoon. And I was like, and the reason I did that is because it was a race I knew I could do, and it would be not super impactful to either the finances or the family time. You know, it's important to me. You know, it's important to me to spend time with them, but it's also, if I don't spend time with them, if I like do too much self-indulgent shit, mm-hmm. I'm going to feel guilty, and I don't want to feel guilty.
What other races are you doing this year?
Actually, for the first time in years, I'm actually registered for nothing right now. Can you believe that?
You have nothing to register for.
I have nothing. Well, I have something to register for. I'll register for Umstead in September, and I'll probably register for 3 Days of the Fair in May. But right now, and that's a vacuum. You know, yeah. I'm looking, you know, I'm like thinking, should I register? You know, I'm kind of like enjoying this not registered for anything, just running for the fun of running. Melissa, hey, can you pace me at Beast of Burden? Sure, let's go pace you at Beast of Burden, you know? I paced Fred Nirolo at Great New York 100 last month.
I want to do that race.
That's a fun race.
I really want to
That's
do that
a
race.
Fun
That's
race.
That's like totally in my wheelhouse.
Yeah, it's
because street meat's my thing.
What's that?
Street meat, you know? Like when I go to New York, I don't ever go to restaurants. Everything I'm eating out of those goddamn carts or the pizza by the slice, that's it.
Yeah. It's a cool race for that. So you really get to see a part of the city, lots of the city that you don't get to see as a tourist. Even as people who live there, you don't see a lot of that stuff. So it's a cool
race. You know what it reminds me of is that thing I did in San Francisco, the Chipping Fu thing.
Oh,
Fear and Loathing 50.
Oh, yeah? What's that?
It's free.
Okay.
It's a 50-mile 50K.
Okay.
And you meet on top of Twin Peaks, and he gives you turn-by-turn directions. And you have you ever been to San Francisco?
Yes.
They have this 49-mile road tour. So, like, when if you, like, you went there on your honeymoon, and you're like, what are the things people do in San Francisco? You know, you ride the cable car, blah, blah, blah. Do the 49-mile drive. And it's a drive that takes you through all the neighborhoods. It takes you up the big, steep roads.
No kidding.
Along the water. So it's this thing, this 49-mile road.
Okay.
That's what this race is. It's that path.
It runs that path, huh?
But it's also The Rocket, his birthday. Yeah.
No kidding.
So it's his birthday run, and they sing happy birthday to him.
Yeah.
And it's just so chill. Stan Jensen is the aid station. He just drives around, and you get shit out of his car. It's like,
that's awesome.
It's free.
That is so cool.
You know, we did that last year.
That's so cool. That sounds a little bit like Retaste of Chicago.
Yeah.
You're going to see a lot of the neighborhoods. You're going to eat a lot of the food.
But not required eating there.
What's that?
No required eating.
Yeah, but someone
should... Retaste of Chicago is aggressive. It is hard to eat that much food.
Oh, yeah?
Yes.
Sounds like my kind of challenge.
Yeah, like, I mean, for someone like me or you, it's fine.
Yeah.
But you will literally be thinking, oh, please tell me the next food stop
And if it was like a tiny... Like, if it was Julie Eisters...
Yes.
It would be hard.
She would never.
Oh, I need to tell you my Julie Eisters story.
Oh, yeah. Let's do it. She's... Yeah.
Because... This is the same to your friend Alfredo,
okay.
Who I unfortunately never met. Stop me when it sounds familiar, all right? So I'm doing Umstead. It's 2012, right? And I've known Julie Alistairs from the Ultralist, and I met her at the race headquarters. And I've seen her, I think, at Across the Years, and I met her at Across the Years. So I've raced with her. I've seen her before. So it's the middle of the night at Umstead. I'm in lap 7, and I'm on my way to a 28-hour finish. There's 8 laps. And I'm walking up this hill that for unrelated reasons is called the Olive Garden. And at the top of the hill, there's this left turn and there's this tiny woman just curled up in a ball on the side of the trail. And Umstead has volunteer pacers. Like if you go to Umstead and you ask them, they will give you a pacer. Like people line up like from the local Roadrunners Club. It's actually really awesome. And they have like pacer training like a couple weeks before the race. It's actually really cool. This is one of the things. Umstead is the best organized race I've ever been in. Anyway, And the pacer's just standing there like, I don't know what I'm supposed to do. The look on his face was like, I am so confused right now.
Her pacer,
who I believe was a volunteer pacer. And he just looks at me and he's like, she just told me to wake her up in 5 minutes. And I'm like, because I was like, is she okay? You know? And I'm like, okay, all right. And I just went on, right?
Wake her up in 5 minutes.
Yeah, I guess, or 10 minutes or whatever it was, right? And lap 8, the sun's come up. Here comes Julie Hester's passing me. And she passed me on her shoulder. I was like, that was me. I recognize your voice. it's my favorite. It's one of my favorite stories because he was like, she did not look okay on the side of the trail there, you know? And the pacer sitting there like, I don't know if I'm doing something right or wrong. Should I let her sleep here? You know?
That Alfredo story, I like, and the last 2 years ago at Potawatomi, she did the 100. She finished. It was like dark out and she came to the start, finish, 10th, and I'm done. And then she just, boom, right onto the ground.
No kidding.
Crashed out.
And she is one of the most wonderful people. She is one of those, like at, remember I was telling you about Lisa Smith Batchen, who like, really cares? And like, it's not that she knows how to fix you, but it's that she actually cares. Like, I get that vibe from Julie as well. You know what I mean?
Like, I wish she was my mom.
Yeah.
You know? Oh, like, she'd be, like, the perfect mom.
There's a couple people in my life that are like that. It's just like, man, you are such a wonderful person. I want to spend... You're easy to hang out with. I like, you know, I, yeah.
Who
yeah.
should I interview? Who would you like to hear their story?
Well, we talked about Lisa. I would like...
She's on the list.
Yeah, yeah.
I talked to her
often. You know who... You know, this is going to come out of left, but this is like kind of like a thing I don't know much
about. It's going to be like Scott Jurek.
I think you should interview Anton Kupishka. No, okay. So you know the guy that does the oatmeal? The webcomic?
Yeah.
He's an ultra runner.
What's his name?
Matthew Inman.
Okay.
And... He I think he probably doesn't have a, I don't know if he has an interest, everyone has an interesting story, so let's put that aside, but I don't know what his story is, but I know that he is a coincidental merge of like two lives, like my online life, like where I like follow web comics and I read, you know, I read web comics, like I read, I'm a fan of them, right? And he's one of them, and so, oh wow, this guy's an ultra runner, and he's actually like, you know, he's actually really, really, he seems really interesting.
Have you ever seen him in a race?
I've never. I think he lives in Washington or Idaho or something like that. And I just enjoy his webcomic so much. And he runs ultras. And I don't know anything about him besides that.
That's a good recommendation.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
I would love to hear his story. But from an ultra runner perspective.
Yeah.
You know? He wrote a book called like The Reasons Why I Run or something. And
right.
I bought it and I didn't read it. It's like which makes me feel really bad now that I'm recommending him. But, you know, I would love to hear his story.
He hasn't run a race since 2013, though. He ran 150. No, 250s. He ran White River twice.
See, I've never even looked him up, so I don't even know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But still would be interesting. I mean, that'd be an interesting person.
Yeah.
You know, he's on my list for sure. Gary Johnson, totally stalking him. Like, I just can't get him.
Yeah, there's people that probably are not available. Or that wouldn't come on.
I want to do the mayor of Chicago.
Why?
He's a triathlete.
No kidding.
Badass. Like me.
Yeah.
Triathlete. He would be a really... I mean, but I want to interview these people just about their running life, though.
Yeah, yeah. Like, if you talk to Gary Johnson about... He did Leadville, right?
He did Arrowhead.
He did Arrowhead? I didn't know that.
He's done Western States. I think he came in second place at Arrowhead.
Oh, man.
He's done a lot of ultras.
Yeah, and he's a...
He's competitive.
Yeah, but, you know, he... I don't know, man.
Too much of the doobage, I think, maybe with him. Like, he's not focused.
Well, I mean, he ran for president.
Yeah.
I voted for him. You voted for him.
Sean Astin.
I don't know who that is.
The guy from the Lord of the Rings.
Oh, really? The actor?
Yeah, he's the guy that played the little hobbit, the hobbit guy with the feet.
He's the Sam. Guy. He's the guy that plays
Rudy.
What's that?
He was Rudy.
Rudy in the Notre Dame movie?
Yeah.
Rudy?
He was Rudy.
That was okay. Okay. You know what? I was thinking, when you said Lord of the Rings, the Hobbit guy, I was thinking of the guy that plays...
Bilbo Baggins?
Yeah, the guy who also plays Sherlock's friend, Watson, in the Sherlock show.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, him. So, I don't know.
We've seen him in a bunch of marathons. I've emailed back and forth with him, but he's super busy. He's super political, too.
Is he really?
His mom was Patty Duke.
Like, literally?
Like, his mom is Patty Duke.
No kidding.
Yes.
Holy smokes.
And then his dad is, there's like, it's a controversy, but I think it was Desi Arnaz Jr., I think.
Okay. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
I got a whole Patty Duke thing from when I was drinking. I didn't know that it was a trick with the camera. I thought it was two girls, and it was just like, when I got sober, I was really disappointed.
That flew over my head a little bit. I'm sorry, I gotta say.
There's like an 80-year-old person listening to this that's laughing right now.
Okay, got it. Okay, got it.
The Red Hot Chili Peppers flea.
Oh, yeah?
I didn't
know that.
I really want to interview
There's him. A comedian in England who has run a bunch of marathons. In fact, he did a stunt where he like ran a marathon every day for a couple weeks or something like that. An English comedian, a British comedian.
I have to look that up too.
Yeah,
I'd like to get some of these people's just the running story though. You know,
yeah,
because it
yeah.
would probably be very neat for them to just talk about it.
Well, the thing that's impressed me about Matt Inman is that he's obviously like a super intelligent guy. You know, and he's a really interesting writer. Like the stuff I've seen him write, and he's a talented artist, blah blah blah. But he's also a runner, and a guy like that is going to have insights that, you know. One reason I'm hanging out with Fred Muro though is he's a super intelligent guy.
Yeah,
and a runner. You might want to get him on your list too. He's got a streak. He's got like a 36-year streak. Yeah, he's an interesting guy. He's a from Connecticut. Anyway, but he's like a super smart guy, and like really smart people tend to have really interesting insights about their running, and they're always super interesting to talk to.
And most of the really, really successful people tend to be smart people too.
I know.
There's a lot of really, really brainy people. Oh, Yolanda Holder. I gotta get her.
Yeah.
I bet you that she's gonna get scooped up by Eric Ultra Runner Podcast.
Yeah, probably.
Probably get her because she just finished the thing probably today.
The thing?
The
3100. Yeah, that's right. That's right.
But she's been on my list for a long time.
Yeah, I've heard, I don't know much about her, but I have heard her name. Yeah, that's super.
The Walking Diva.
Yeah. I mean, people like that, like really, really smart people. Like, you know, you ever hear, I think it was on actually Elevation Trail, maybe. They interviewed Blake Wood.
Yeah. He was just on Ultraman Podcast, too.
Oh, was he?
I missed that one. He just did a PR marathon.
No kidding. Oh, maybe that's where I heard something. It. Yeah. Maybe I heard that then. But I remember, but he's like a super smart guy, so it's like those interviews are really fascinating. The guy that runs Aravaipa Running in Arizona.
Corey?
Yeah, Jamil Corey.
Yeah.
And his brother Nick, they're both like super intelligent people, like really interesting, you know.
Anyway. They would be good, too.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, what I really want to do is get on the road. Like, that's my thing that I was thinking about is that... you know, we're like 2:30 and we should probably wrap it up.
Oh, man.
I would like to like go to say like the Couries and say, hey, listen, I'm going to fly out to Phoenix. Come go out there on Friday night. I want to sit down with Jamil Couri and do a long run face to face. Cause I think it's better this way.
Yeah.
Then in the morning, I want to go running with your running group. I want you to pick 3 or 4 people from your running group that are cool. And I want to do a group show with them to bring that running group to the world.
Have you ever thought about bringing a microphone on a run? And then that'd be really hard. I get the problem
it's hard,
with that.
Yeah. The logistics of that are different.
The very first podcast I ever listened to, Fidipa Nations, that Steve Runner guy. I don't know. I haven't listened to it. I don't know if it's still around or not. But he had a running podcast, and he used to run while he did it. And he somehow made it work. He's a radio guy.
Yeah.
And he somehow made it work, but it's still, even then it wasn't. The guy in Detroit, Mike something. What's his podcast called? Dirt Dogs Running Diatribe. Yeah.
He talked about us once.
Oh, did he really?
He did.
Yeah.
He listens to us.
He does it when he... It's hard to make it work, but it's always so interesting.
Yeah.
You know, to bring, like, to literally bring the running conversation into the recording.
It's a shame, because, like, if there was enough money that I could do this for a living, there's so many things I could do.
Yeah.
Like, I have so many ideas, and, you know...
Yeah.
You can't give up your job, and then you think about the amount of time and energy and effort that's involved in all of this.
Yes.
You know, it's just so... Like, this week will be, you know, 30 hours of this between these three interviews and, you know, doing all this stuff.
Yeah.
But, I mean, there's so many things I want to do. Maybe the bibs will take off, you know?
Yeah, man.
If everybody went on that, just the web traffic advertising income might be enough, you know?
Yeah.
Like, if you had Strava and you could monetize the put ads on that website, I'm sure you could make a living off just the ads, you know?
And they do.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's a bunch of people that pay $6 a month to them. You know, that's a living. That's a good living, you know? So...
I got to find a way because there's so many things that we could do. And when people are inspired and they go and they run their first race and all that, then it's all worth it. You know, like,
or they lose 100 pounds like the person you were talking about. Yeah.
So what else? I think that's it.
We could talk until 10 o'clock.
This could be like a triple podcast. Really.
Yeah, seriously.
But then you wouldn't get your run in. I thought about that. Like, what if we just talked for another 4 hours and you'd be fucked?
If we want to talk for another 4 hours, I'd be running it. I would run right now. I'd run as soon as we finished.
Yeah.
And then get where
I'd be. Because you only have to do 1 mile.
I only have to do a mile. And since I ran 100 kilometers yesterday, I won't even feel guilty about it.
Where are you going tonight?
I'm thinking Rochester, Minnesota.
Oh.
So, yeah. So, another thing that I haven't done in a while, but I'm using this road trip as an opportunity to do it is state high points. I've been to the highest point of, I forgot, 35 states, something like that. And I'm missing Iowa. I'm missing Minnesota. I'm missing North Dakota. I'm not going to get Minnesota this trip, but I am. Rochester, Minnesota is kind of on the way to the highest point in Iowa. So tomorrow we'll go to get Hawkeye Point, Iowa, and we'll head straight north, get the one in North Dakota, and then I actually have and then we're going to go west and check out Glacier National Park.
So first you're going to go to Minnesota, then you're going to go to Iowa, then you're
Well, Minnesota's on I-90.
Okay.
So that's kind of like where we said we're going to stop in Rochester and then
dip down.
And then dip, because the state high point for Iowa is like a mile from the border. If you look at a map of state high points, half of them, in fact, the majority of them are like a mile from their border.
Have you ever been to Duluth?
I have not been.
It's ridiculous.
Why?
Beautiful.
Yeah, we were going to go, but it just turned out to be... To do the high point in Minnesota, I would have to get a hotel in Duluth, and then it's a 100-mile drive, and then a 3.5-mile hike. And my wife is with me, and I can't...
Is that a Superior hiking trail?
It's...
Almost
a 100 miles on the north shore of Lake Superior.
So take Highway 61 all the way up?
I don't know what the highway number is, but yeah, it's about 100 miles. And you park, and then you have to hike 3.5. It's going to take half a day to do it, and then drive back, right? And what am I going to do, leave my wife in a hotel in Duluth? I can't do that. So I'm going to instead do Iowa. I'm going to do North Dakota. And then we're going to do like stuff we could do together. Iowa is like a walk-up. North Dakota is like I think it's a half mile. And so I could just do that really quick. And then we're going to do stuff together. Like, we're going to do Glacier National Park. And then we're going to go all the way west to Seattle, probably. Then we're going to drive south to California, pick up our son. We're going to drive back. We're going to check out the eclipse.
Where is he in California?
He's actually right now in San Clemente. My parents live in Riverside, so he's with them.
So are you driving the one down, or?
What's that?
Are you going to drive Highway 1 down?
I was thinking I would do Highway 1 through Washington, Oregon, and then 5. Because I've done Highway 1 down the California coast. It's really nice. I'd like to do it again, but we're going to run out of time.
Nice.
So, yeah.
All right. Well, me and Steve are going to go run now.
Yeah.
And if you want to support the show, you can follow us on Facebook. 10 Junk Miles has a page on Facebook, or at 10 Junk Miles on Twitter. If you want to follow me, at Scotty Coomer on Twitter or on Facebook. Steve, if people want to follow you or get to know you, you have a blog?
Yeah, steveturcy.blogspot.com. You go there. I don't post much on anymore, you know. I don't really, you know, I mean, I have a Twitter account, Steve Turcy. I have, I don't know, Facebook, Steve T. Okay. Whatever. I don't, you know, I don't really have a, I mean, I, no. Instagram, Steve Turcy.
There you go.
Yeah, Strava. So.
Nice.
Yeah.
And that's about it. So that's a wrap. And thank you so much. And I'm sure we could do this again.
Yeah, this is fun.
If you could, next time you come, we'll do a whole group show. You can just guest host.
Oh, that'd be cool.
It would be really
fun. I'd like to meet all the people.
Yeah. I mean, it's fun when you're in the room, too, because if you think this was fast, you can only imagine how fast it is when there's the five of us and we're just like boom, 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 boom.
Yeah,
and
they look imagine. Up
and you're like, oh my God, that was 2.5 hours already?
Yeah, yeah. Do you actually have a real watch that beats, or is that just a sound effect? Yeah, that's what I thought. I knew it. Nice. Cool. All right, man. Thanks.
240. Yeah.